We're sorry for starting a little late, but we'll rise for the pledge. Do we have the high school here? High school student? Student government? Do we have middle school student government?
We have our middle school.
All right, come on down.
Good evening. My name is Christian Lamantia. 2016 has been off to a busy start at the middle schools. Although the new year has just begun, we are already looking ahead to next school year, as the 8th graders have started their scheduling process. The 8th grade counselors and Ms. Lynn spoke to the ELA classes about what to expect over the next month. Parents and their children are eagerly planning their 9th grade program. Each school is an opportunity to participate in their first high school one-on-one session, focusing on academics. For 7th and 8th graders, midterm week is upon us. Students and teachers have been hard at work prepping for their exams and are looking forward to a successful week. Metlin Middle School Student Council and Service Club are partnering together to promote Project Replenish, helping those in need in our community. Gail Warwick, Director of Volunteer Services at the Mid-Island Y JCC, spoke to both groups about our community's issue of hunger and food insufficiency. These clubs will spearhead a school-wide campaign to strengthen the resources of our local food pantry. On Friday, January 22nd, during extended MAP groups participated in a birthday giving party. Gift bags and tissue paper were provided to the MAP groups. Students and faculty filled the gift bags with birthday surprises for children whose parents are unable to provide a birthday celebration. Student Council will deliver the gift bags to birthday wishes of Long Island. On Tuesday, January 12th, students in grades 5 through 8 participated in our annual school spelling bee. All of the students put forth their best effort. Our top winners included first place, Emma Kimmel, 6th grade. Second place, Avi Ram Wolfstein, 8th grade. Third place, Leah Morgenthal, 5th grade. And fourth place, Leah Mercherel, 5th grade. Our first place winner, Emma Kimmel, will be invited to participate in the Long Island Spelling Bee at Hofstra University. A big congratulations to all students, and a special thanks to our ELA teachers for hosting classroom spelling bees. The Dance with the Teachers MAP activity was a hit with a number of our groups participating and the school getting to watch some of the amazingly choreographed routines. Although it was clear that the students should stick to their day jobs, a great time was had by all. Finally, we are very excited about a new idea coming to POBMS, our first dance-a-thon. An idea was developed and implemented by some of our most generous and kind fifth graders. Students working with the charity Contractors for Kids are hosting a dance-a-thon to take place on March 4th. Those dancing will work to raise money for Contractors for Kids, a non-for-profit corporation founded for the purpose of providing assistance to families in our communities. The goal for Contractors for Kids is to assist children and their families to overcome obstacles that have unfortunately changed or have impacted their lives through the sickness, injury, or death of a child. Students in our area have come together to help bring this amazing organization to Nassau County. We look forward to this fun, generous, and heartfelt fundraiser. We hope you'll dance with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, our high school rep could not be here tonight due to traveling under these weather conditions. So I was asked to share the following. The student body is in midterm mode starting tomorrow. Also, the student government is hyping up Battle of the Classes, which is coming up soon, and the sophomore college tour embarks on their trip this Wednesday.
Usually has so much more to say. Board announcements? Emily?
A number of us attended parents as reading partners in the various elementary school classes, which is for many of us, one of our favorite activities. I was fortunate enough to visit Ms. Rogers' class at Pasadena. Very polite and attentive group who, you know, suffered me to read Harry the Dirty Dog to them because I went old school. They were very creative in their responses and thoughtful, came up with great explanations for why Harry had the brush under his pillow. Some of them thought he was being manipulative, others just being practical. And it was interesting to me, actually, to notice that, you know, Ms. Rogers sort of very gently led them through some critical thinking skills, like this is inferencing in a very natural way. And, you know, the kids were definitely exercising that skill. It was, you know, lovely for me to visit.
Deb?
Is it on? I wanted to recognize and thank all of the employees of the county and the town who spent many, many hours clearing our streets and our POB buildings and grounds staff for coordinating and clearing snow and ice to allow our students and staff the safe access to our buildings. So thank you very much.
I just wanted to add that I know our public loves using some of the hills on some of our grounds for sleigh riding, but I think because of maybe the tennis courts that were new, it threw off where the parking pattern was. So we had a lot of cars parked that prohibited vehicles from getting out that were needed to clear some of the larger parking lots in the district, Matlin and the POB High School. So I asked that everyone, you know, we're going to have to come up with our own work with the maintenance crews to try to figure out a way to get around that, but we're going to need the community's cooperation as well. It doesn't do anyone any good when vehicles can't get out because we're all on the slope. So it'll be something we'll work out over time, hopefully before the next big snow hits, but we're all going to have to cooperate a little bit to make sure that we can get everything cleared in a timely fashion.
So I also attended the Pasadena PARP week, and I always enjoy going to the elementary schools. I know I'm taller than the students there. When I get to the middle schools, they outsize me by then, so it's always nice to go there. It's probably among my favorite thing to do is to go into all the different buildings and interact with the students and the staff, so I always look forward to doing that. Last week, Pasadena had parent math workshops, and I believe old Beth had earlier, a couple weeks earlier. I wanted to just thank everybody involved in putting them together. Unfortunately, it wasn't as well attended as I would have expected them to be, as I understand it. But for those that did attend, I hear it was a fantastic experience with good materials, great resources, and it certainly helped students, helped parents help their students. My understanding is at Pasadena combined, there was about 25 parents on both nights, and I'm guessing old Beth is about the same, not even that much combined. Yeah. So, you know, given the chatter that's been out there about all the math at the elementary level, it was a little, as a elementary school parent as well, it was a little disappointing to see. But look, our district continues to make resources available, and I would encourage more parents that have concerns and questions to take advantage of the resources that are available. It's a great opportunity to speak with those people involved, and I certainly implore you, if you or your child are having difficulties, to please call your teacher first, then the principal. It's usually not only the first steps, but they're generally going to be the best way to get the most and best assistance as early as possible. So the last thing is a shout out to a former board buddy of mine, Evie Rothman. I wanted to bring an article that I read in the paper. For those of you that know, Evie always would read different articles and would bring it. So I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and there was an article, "Coming to a Classroom Near You, Minecraft." And I would always yell at my son for playing hours and hours of Minecraft, but apparently I can't anymore because apparently there's a lot of educational value associated with it. And this summer, Minecraft is rolling out a classroom edition of the video game. Some of us may recall the Oregon Trail when we were younger, and then SimCity was another one, and even Angry Birds has a physics component to it. Well, Minecraft is coming to town, and all of our little digital architects can be engaged in an educational version that is supposedly going to allow teachers to customize projects, track progress, and do a whole host of other things. So certainly that dovetails with the presentation that I had reported on several months ago from the October NISBA conference about gaming, and something I think we should look into. It's only getting rolled out this summer, so I'm not quite sure if there's going to be kinks to work out, but something to at least look at. That's it. Go Broncos.
I too attended Mrs. Sachs's class at Pasadena, so thank you so much for the invitation. It was definitely a highlight for a new board member, and I'm sure will continue to be, so thank you so much for that. I don't want to take away from Emily, because I'm sure she's going to thank SNAP for the donations, wink, wink, right? But in addition, Mrs. Barbara Knowles and MSC Industries also for the donations for POBOTS. So I just wanted to add that. And yes, go Broncos, especially my house.
Emily, you got something?
Well, funnily enough, yes, I did want to thank SNAP for yet another donation. I believe this is a foosball table.
Yes.
That anyway, they continue to be wonderful and to creatively work with our district to enhance the education of
Thank
students
you.
With autism.
Oh, we always forget. Okay, just wanted to update the community on something a little bit. You know, one of the board's goals this year is we're trying to find a way to create a 9-period day in the high school. We're investigating ways to do this and working with the PCT to deliver a solution that's a win for everyone. A 9-period day is something that parents and students have wanted for years, going back longer than everyone just about has been on the Board of Ed. The reasons for doing it have been discussed at Board of Ed meetings, PTA meetings, curriculum meetings for many years. That said, we have not decided on any specific plan. Ideas have been shared, but nothing has been proved by the board. We now have two plans on the table. The second is being vetted by central administration and will be presented to the committee at their next meeting. The BOE and the administration are very cognizant that high school kids need to start picking their courses and scheduling has to get done. So guidance counselors have had to discuss the possibility of scheduling a 9-period day with students without having the plan on how to do it in place yet, but they also have to work within the constructs of the current 8-period day. So we know that this is creating some confusion and anxiety about the upcoming school year, and we apologize for that. But any 9-period day plan will need to not just be negotiated with the teachers' union, but supported by the high school teachers for it to be successful, and that's what we want it to be, successful. Dr. Lewis and Principal Murray will present our options to the community and discuss them with the board on the floor at the February 29th Board of Ed meeting. This will allow time for stakeholder feedback before making a decision. We thank you for your patience and understanding while the high school administrative team, PCT, central administration, and the committee work this all out. Thank you very much. And now we are on to, Superintendent or Algebra 2? What's... Yes. No, superintendent.
Yeah,
I don't know why it's that way. Two superintendents'
announcements. Okay. Well, the superintendent's announcements. First of all, I want to recognize two board members for they have achieved a level of excellence in professional development from school boards by attending workshops. So we have Debbie, who's has hit 150 points. So congratulations for sitting through all those workshops. And Gary, in addition to giving their service to the community, they are also following up on honing their skills so that they could be even better board members. So we thank you for doing that. So I also would like to salute the entire B&G team here in POB. You know, often when I'm sitting at home in my warm bed, as are many of the administrators and staff. You don't realize that these gentlemen have left their homes, sometimes unshoveled, and have come in. And yesterday, Saturday, they were there. Sunday, they were there. And I certainly couldn't do it, and I want to thank them. We often honor them one day in the year. All the buildings, we have B&G Day, and we will continue to do that. But I want to thank them. No, we didn't lose a snow day because of their hard work, so I want to thank them. And for those principals who did the math parent night, I want to thank you. I know it takes a lot of work to go into preparing for it. And even if one parent came out and learned something, I think it was worth it, and I want to thank you for doing that. We have a lot on the table tonight, so I'm going to stop there and move it over to Algebra 2. Are we okay?
That's what I was saying, Joey.
I know.
Am I on?
No.
No? Okay.
Now you are.
Okay, so last week, Levittown sent out a letter to parents letting them know that Common Core Algebra 2 instruction would cease, and instead the students were going to be taught the old Algebra 2 trigonometry curriculum. At my count, I've been, you know, asking districts. They are one of at least 15 at this point who have confirmed to me that they are teaching the old curriculum. My assumption is that there are probably more out there who are either doing it on the down low or doing it without so much fanfare, but it is at least 15, and that includes Belmore Merrick, Oceanside, Hop Hog, North Rockland, Seaford, Wantagh, and Brewster. Once I saw Levittown's letter, I started to ask some questions. I just wanted to see if the concerns of these districts that had gone to the old curriculum mirrored what we were, you know, hearing from our parents here. And in addition to what we've heard, you know, about the lack of trig having a significant effect on the students as they move on to higher level math and science, I heard a lot of concern about region scores. Like Plainview Old Beth Page, most districts will report that in 2014 and 2015, the cohort of students that took both the old Regents exams and the new Regents exams in algebra and geometry performed much better on the old exam. That is in spite of the fact that instruction was primarily Common Core focused. So the old test has consistently served as a safety net for these students. Where we run into a problem with Common Core Algebra 2 is the fact that the old and the new curriculum are vastly different, where there was a tremendous amount of overlap between algebra, old algebra and new algebra, and old geometry and new geometry. There is a lot of content that has been pulled out of Common Core Algebra 2 that was formerly in the old curriculum, and many of these districts that have gone with the old curriculum felt that it would be virtually impossible to prepare their students for both exams, that they pretty much had to choose one or the other because there was no way to stick with the Common Core curriculum and then make sure that the students had everything they needed to be successful on the safety net exam. So what these districts basically said they were doing was, rather than putting their stock in a test that had far too many unknowns, unknown content, and an unknown curve, they were choosing to focus on the test where they felt most confident that they could make their students as successful as possible, while at the same time ensuring that the students had these extremely valuable trig topics that they need as they move on to college-level math and science. And I know that we ourselves have expressed some concerns about the lack of trig and other issues with Common Core Algebra 2. Dr. Lewis sent her letter to the state. I know several board members, myself included, spoke to Tim Kremer at NISBA so that he could share that information with the Common Core Task Force. But at this point, you know, we now have at least a dozen schools, probably more, whose students are going to be applying to colleges with transcripts that are going to reflect higher grades in both the course and the Regents exam for Algebra 2. They'll also have a stronger background in trigonometry. And I have to question whether or not this will make our students less competitive during the college application process, whether it'll make it harder for them to get into the schools they want, whether it'll affect their ability to be successful in future courses. From the parents I hear from, not only in POB but in other districts, the answer is yes. And I feel like time is running out. You know, we need to do something. This cohort has gotten a raw deal 3 years in a row. This is the third time they're going to be asked to take two exams. And this year, that second exam can't even be considered the safety net that it's been considered in the past. And we've sat here and we've said again and again how awful it is that they're consistently the guinea pigs. And I just feel like this is our opportunity to do the right thing, to say that we understand what the state is putting them through. We're doing our best to minimize the negative impact, and we're making a decision to ensure that we're setting you up to be as successful as possible. And I strongly believe that the only way to do that is to revert back to the old curriculum.
Okay, so I have been speaking with other districts about their processes. Many of the districts decided in September to move in that direction. There are a few districts that decided in as soon as the Board of Regents gave the permission, which was at the December Board of Regents meeting. So you have a subset of districts that set the path of having their children have an assessment June 1st, which is the Common Core assessment, and not do well on it, and put their egg in the Algebra 2 trig basket. And that's fine. They're allowed to do that. You're allowed to take the higher of the two grades. We have, since September, been preparing students for the Common Core assessment, but at the same time thinking about the Algebra 2 trigonometry topics and weaving in some of those topics as we go along. You know, it's unfortunate that the state named Algebra 2 what they did, because it almost assumes that there are no trig topics that are in Algebra 2, and that's not true. There are trig topics, but there are topics that are in Algebra 2 trig that are not covered in Algebra 2, and vice versa. So we feel that what we have put together is a good plan for maintaining the Common Core exam and taking the exam June 1st, because these children have been in Algebra Common Core, Geometry Common Core, and are now in Algebra 2 Common Core. Some of those topics have been, it's a sequence. The three courses are sequenced. And so some of those topics have been repeated, and we believe that kids will be very well prepared for the Algebra 2 Common Core, and we have woven in some of the Algebra 2 topics. But knowing that, we've also prepared an opportunity to do some extra help sessions, and also there are 9 days that we would help students to prepare for the Algebra 2 trig exam in June. So that's one bite at the apple for Algebra 2 trig, one bite at the apple for the Common Core for all students. But in addition, what I've spoken with the board is, and I wish I had come up with the idea because I think it's a wonderful idea, but Half Hollow Hills, a district that probably is comparable to our district, I would say, that district has devised a way to front-load pre-calculus with all of the topics that were missing out of the trig, to front-load those into the pre-calculus course in the fall, and to prepare all the students to retake the exam in January. That's the old algebra exam, the 2005 algebra exam. So that's the third bite of the apple. And then any one of the three scores that's the highest the student could have. So they would have an opportunity to do the Algebra Common Core exam, which every student, by the way, every student has, in every district, has to take that Common Core exam. That's the law. You can't take the old exam without taking the Common Core exam. So every student will be taking two exams. No matter who you are, you have to take two exams. So, and the higher of the two will count. But in addition, being able to, because those topics were already moved into pre-calculus. Those topics we could front load in the fall, and every student would be prepared with very little additional extensions to take the exam again in January during the Regents Week. And then you now have two bites at the apple for Algebra 2 trig. You could even take, we could also prepare a course in the summer for those students who wish to do that.
Do you have a question? Yes.
Okay, if people could sort of keep the chatter down, thanks very much. One question I have is about if you're doing it sort of in, it's reminding, as I think I'd said to you before, a little bit of students when they had the RCT safety net. In a way, it's very similar. You have to sit for this test, but then there's this option to take this test after. One of the questions I'd have about it is, whenever you have a course that's over a year and a half, you have an entire summer to sort of forget the first half of the first two-thirds of the course, really. So I guess my assumption would be, wouldn't there have to be some component built in of review of the previous year?
Again, yes, you're absolutely right, but math is sequential, and when you begin pre-calculus, you would do some review anyway. I also have suggested that we could run something in the summer because kids could take that exam in August. But that's also, you have to remember, we're not saying that kids are not going to do well. We're saying that kids are being well prepared for the Common Core Algebra 2 exam. But we're giving opportunities for students. It's easy to say, let's just do the old algebra. And we certainly could do that if that's the direction. We could certainly do that, but I'm going to say to you that if you do that, and children, and because there is a subset of students who have done better on Common Core, not a large group, but there are kids who have done better on the Common Core exam than they have on the old exam. We have that data. There are kids, I'm not saying that that's the majority of the kids, but there are kids. So if you are moving only in the old exam direction, you are sending kids into an exam for which they have no opportunity to do well. That's a June 1, because the reverse doesn't happen. You can't, if we decide to move in the direction of the old algebra trigonometry exam, that exam occurs after June 1st. So you would have to, if you did that, you are saying you're taking the algebra Common Core exam June 1st, and for sure you will not be able to use that score. That's what you're doing. And that's okay, but for sure, that because once you move in the direction of abandoning the Common Core, we've done half a year of Common Core, if you do that, you have denied kids the opportunity of continuing in the instruction that we've already established. So the next half of the year, we could do that, because other districts are doing that. We could do that, but the opportunities for success now becomes less.
Lorna, I know, I just want to add one thing to this. I know a lot of this is based on grades and how kids, because as we're
right.
saying, our kids
Absolutely.
Will perform on the Common Core, but we have some data from the algebra that there have been students who perform better on the old exam. I want to make note that on the transcript, whatever grade the child's taking, it's going to say the child took the Common Core,
right.
the more rigorous exam, or
right.
the child's grade reflects the 2005,
right. exactly.
which makes a difference.
Right.
So people think that it just says Algebra 2 on the transcript. It will say Algebra Common Core, and it would say Algebra Trigonometry. So the thought of you're comparing yourself, Plainview would be comparing yourself to Levittown, Hauppauge. Those would be the districts that you would choose to do that. The proposal I'm putting forward simply gives you the option of doing it both ways. And it addresses the SAT question, because some topics that we have talked about for juniors or for sophomores. Most of the sophomores are the ones that are most concerned, and the parents who have spoken are mostly sophomore parents. We would address that question, because by the time the SATs come around, all topics would have been addressed. Every topic would have been addressed.
I have two questions. You know, we're saying that we're preparing our students for the Common Core Algebra 2 regions. We're preparing them well. We've never seen this test. And that's not a, you know, it's kind of like taking a shot in the dark. It's a test we've never seen. We don't have old tests to go back and draw on. So we're doing the best we can to prepare students for the test. But we don't know what the test looks like. And until next year, when we get to see a sample test, and the year after that, when we can see two sample tests, the best we can do is build a curriculum around what we think the test is going to look like. And again, 2 years in a row, you know, we did focus on Common Core, and the kids still did better on the second test, even though we spent the whole year focused on Common Core. Also, I want to point out that the Half Hollow Hills plan that says that the kids are going to take the regions again after taking that first two quarters of pre-calc that's front-loaded with the trig, to me, proves the point of what these other school districts are saying, which is basically that within the Common Core course itself, you can't give the kids everything they need to be successful on that second Regents exam. The fact that Half Hollow Hills feels the need to give that Regents exam again 6 months later says, you know, basically these schools said, we can only prepare our kids for one test. We would rather focus on the one that we know. We're comfortable with the curriculum. We know it's aligned to the exam. We know that what we're teaching is what's going to be covered on the exam, rather than hedging our bets and hoping for the best, because we don't want to be sitting here looking at students who performed in a mediocre way on both exams. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to jump in on a couple of things here. First of all, to say that our kids aren't doing well on these Common Core tests is simply to disregard all the hard work that's gone on with this district, with the teachers and the staff and the students. We've actually done exceptionally well on these tests. In fact, on the Algebra 1 class course last year, we were something like the number two district in the entire state.
But that was the second
year. Stop for a second. Let me just have a second, okay? It was the second year, but our kids were still successful the first year. If by definition we're expecting courses to be more rigorous, then by definition you have to expect that you're not going to get as high a grade. If the course is a better, more rigorous course, you're not going to get the higher grade. If you do, then the course wasn't really a more rigorous course. It was a sham. So in any time you have a test where we're going with a new test, if it's a new physics test, if it's a new English test that came out, the new English regions, you're going to have situations where you're going to have to take a test that you're the first ones to take the test. That happens. It's happened to this group 3 years in a row. I hate that. But this group was very, very successful in algebra. They were very, very successful in geometry. I do not see any reason to think they're not going to be successful in this current Common Core course with all the work that's been done towards it. Not only do I think they're going to be successful, and our staff does, they're trying to figure out ways to get the missing trig in as much as they can into this year, even though everyone from the beginning has said, if you have 5 pounds in one bag and 5 pounds in another bag, you can't get it into a 7-pound sack. And it's just the reality is what you stated was correct. You can't do both classes within the same year. I think what Dr. Lewis has told us, which Half Hollow Hills came up, gives you the ability in a class that is sequential to offer the kids the chance to take the class in January if they want it. And you know what? If they all got great grades on the Common Core, they don't have to. We don't know how that's going to go. To say they're not going to do well off the bat, I don't go into things that way. Maybe I'm crazy, but I think, you know, the work that's been done in our district, I think it's been great. I think these kids are going to be successful. And if they want a higher grade in our Regents, they could take it in January. We can make sure we give some extra review classes beforehand so they have the proper preparation. They'll get the trig they need front-loaded for all their other classes anyway, I think, and what we have to do with the pre-calc. But just the thought of moving backwards on something that so many people have worked so hard to go forward on, I have a problem with it. And the other thing that I'm going to say, which is just, to me, what the kids learn is more important than the scores on a test. And to hear you especially, as someone who's so active in the opt-out movement, saying, let's just drop what we're doing and teach to a test, it's an old test that we know, it scares me. There's always going to be new things. You got to rise to the challenge and do well. I think our kids are going to be prepared for this Common Core just as they were on the others. And we are now coming up with a safety net that's given in January, that they'll have plenty of time to learn the other subjects that they need to backfill in, so it won't be crammed in it. But we're also not sending them to slaughter to take a Common Core test that they have no chance of passing. And we talk a lot about confidence, and kids need to have confidence. What kind of confidence do you have walking into a test that you don't have any chance to take and be successful at because you weren't taught the curriculum that goes with the test?
Well, that's how the second test is going to be, because, I mean,
no.
You know, Half Hollow Hills plan shows that you need that first semester.
You're saying send the kids to slaughter on the Common Core test as these other districts have made the decision, let them fail it. They'll get the good grade in the old test, and we'll say, oh, everything's hunky-dory, perfect, let's go on. I'd rather have them see how the Common Core has come out. They have the backfill that they could take with the trig course in January if they want, and we'll make sure we give support and review classes so that they can get over the hump. They're going to be taking pre-calculus math, which is only going to build on the skills that you've had at that point. And while you'll regress a little bit, you know, you're still, I think that what they're learning is rigorous and is a pretty a heavy-duty course that they're doing well. And I just think this is a way to give kids, we are giving the safety net without throwing up our arms and saying, we can't do it. And I don't think we can't do it. I think we can do it. I think a lot of hard work's been done, and I don't want to see us derailing that just because other districts are. That's my thoughts.
I think this is one of these damned if you do and damned if you don't situations. I don't think there's a real right answer. I don't think there's a wrong answer. I think we're dealing with two separate emotions. One is, how do our children, what are the scores they're getting, and how do we perceive those scores? And the second issue is, how do we give our kids every single thing that they need to try to be successful on both those exams? We have time to look and see if we can do some online courses for our kids, where our kids can look and see the areas of weakness that we have. We know that there are definite areas that our kids aren't going to get. Absolutely, it's a given. But we can still find ways after school, and I don't care if we do it on Saturdays, I don't care if we do it in a seminar type of forum, that we can offer our kids the chance to succeed and have the pieces that they're missing to make them feel more comfortable. I know as a parent, and I think everybody here, you only want your kids to get the highest grade you can get. The Common Core, what it has done is it has thrown in a wrench in everything because it's a total unknown. And we don't even know if the test is going to be right or wrong because they've proven that they have some problems with everything. So if we don't revert back and we're going to keep and go the course we're going, then we have to see what are we missing, give dates, give the topic area that we are going to be discussing, and inundate our kids so that anybody who needs to go for extra help, it's going to be available. We can see, I know there's sites online that have different things that people could go into. We had staff members who had done some lesson plans and things like that. We have to make this a user-friendly math. Math has always been a problem in this district. No matter what we want to say, we've always had our highs but very lows. And when our lows are low, we run into problems. So instead of going like this and going on a trajectory that's going to go downhill, let's turn it around and start to go uphill. What can we offer? What are the areas that are missing? Let's get those dates going, and let's see if we have to do something on a weekend, how we're going to do it to offer kids who can't do it after school. And that would be my solution.
Gary, for those people who might not be aware, we have review sessions set up the week of February 22nd, week of February 29th, the week of March 7th, and the week of March 14th for additional trig topics. Just because those topics are now... So, depending on the topic, most of them are running twice during the week.
45 minutes each?
Actually, I think they're about an hour each. Some might be an hour and a half, but for the most part, I think they're an hour, Ginger.
And what are the hours?
2:30 to 3:30 on most days.
Is there anything that we can do?
Days are to be determined at this point, like days of the week.
For the athletes, right?
Right, for the kids who are in sports and stuff. If there's anything we can do later...
Okay, at this time, this is what is available based on teacher availability. Our teachers have been extremely supportive of the after-school times. I don't have a Saturday time for that session or a later time during that time at this point in time to report.
Can we see if there's a that we can look for something later in the day so the kids who play sports can participate?
I can ask again.
Yeah. Thank you.
And then we also have in May additional Common Core Algebra 2 review for the current course. And then beyond the 9 days, which I recognize is a short amount of time, we have additional review sessions that will be offered after school in June for the 2005.
John?
And how much of that, I know Syosset says it's 72 days. Dr. Lewis said it's probably a lot less. But Syosset says it's weeks and weeks and weeks of content that's missing from the new course that needs to be covered for the old exam. What percentage would your guess be that between what's covered in class and what this is going to cover of those missing topics will be addressed by all this? Or will we still need to backload much of it into pre-K? Because I have to be honest, I don't like the idea of sending a kid into their senior year with Regents scores on an 11th grade class that they're not comfortable with, and then saying you have to take it January of your senior year. I mean, I'm open to finding another way to get these topics in, but waiting another 6 months, that doesn't sit well with me. But if we can find a way to get all this in, we can.
We have said that there are topics that, for example, in statistics, we won't be able to complete all of the topics. And even in trig, we won't be able to complete all the topics. But, for example, in the Syosset model, I'm just looking at it. It says there are 11 days for trig. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the syllabus that we have.
Okay.
We have 21 days for trig. This is our syllabus for our district.
Okay.
We have 21 days for trig. So maybe the way they've structured it but the way we've structured it is we've actually looked at trying to weave in topics so that we may end up about 15 days, maybe 15 days off when you add the 9 days and the extra help. There might be 15 school lessons that are off, just by my estimate. And I'm just looking at the topics that are of concern that are floating in the 72 days that you, and I think I've explained this, that the 72 is not 72, that the way the Venn diagram works, if you read it, it's about 35 days off. So, but we have taken those 35 days and pulled in topics, weaved in topics. So, and I'm using the example of the trigonometry. Their estimate of trigonometry in the old Algebra 2, we don't spend 50 days in Algebra 2 trig on trigonometry. So clearly the Venn diagram was created to create a story that's, but as an old Algebra 2 trig teacher, I didn't spend 50 days on it. So, and I know that the Algebra 2, and I can show you our sequence, we have 21 days right now in our Algebra 2 course that we have identified for trigonometry. So that moves an additional 10 days than what the Syosset model has. We really have looked at the 180 days, really have looked at it to get as close as we can to all of the topics. I am saying that in the area of statistic, there we will have some difficulty, and that's the area that would be front-loaded into the pre-calculus.
But that doesn't help them for the June. So basically, you know, we have to send them into one of the tests unprepared. Do we trust the state to put together the Common Core Algebra 2 Regents exam, you know, to align it with the standards that we built the curriculum around? I don't know. Based on what I've seen the state do, it's a huge leap of faith.
I've seen the state do, I would predict the Algebra 2 trig exam to be the hardest exam that they're going to put out because they know what's going on.
The old Algebra 2 trig
exam? Yes. because they know what's going on. I'm just saying. And the algebra too, as they did with algebra, the first year of algebra was a much easier exam than the second year of algebra. That was a harder exam. I'm just saying that's the way they've operated. I've tried to ask about the scaling and all of that. Look, I hear what you're saying. What I'm trying to put forward is a plan that addresses the best preparation for kids in terms of the depth of knowledge that we would like kids to have when they arrive at pre-calculus. The Common Core, I know people think it's a dirty word. I know that you may think that. But what I see happening as a result of the Common Core from K through 12 is a different level of instruction, a deeper understanding of mathematics and of English language arts. And those kids who have taken the first semester of Algebra 2 are learning in a different way. This is why the statistics is so difficult to address, because in the old exam, the statistic unit was so superficial, basic. They use a normal curve. It's just the mean mode standard deviations. Whereas when you move over to the Common Core, it's really understanding how to use data and to analyze it. So those kids, if they're going on to pre-calculus, or they're going on to physics, or they're going on to business, or they're going on to AP Stat, those units that are in the Common Core, they're actually units that they'll see again in AP Stat or the pre-calculus. It's a deeper understanding. Look, the board can direct us to do whatever, and at this point, I'm not sure. My recommendation is that we stay with the plan and provide an opportunity for kids to be able to get three bites at the apple to do well. That's my recommendation, and I will take my direction from the board.
So I feel like we're running out of time here. So I feel like we need to make a decision as to what direction we're going to take. I've expressed my view, obviously. So what's the next? Okay.
Thing that Jody should be proposing to have the board look at changing from the current course that we're on.
Make a motion.
Well, let Barbara tell her how to do it.
To make a motion to amend the agenda to include a motion, and then
Barbara, you got to talk into the mic too. I'm sorry.
You'd have to make a motion to amend the agenda to entertain a new motion, and if that passes, then your motion would be.
You got to talk to the mic. People can't hear you. Talk into the mic.
Sorry. The first motion is to amend the agenda to add the motion you would want to make.
Okay.
If that passes, then a motion is made.
In new business.
In new business.
Okay.
And the motion would be the vote on whether or not we go with the old curriculum, or okay.
You would make a motion to change to.
You would make a motion to amend the agenda to include the following motion.
Now she wants help on what that motion
would
be.
The wording of the motion. So I have to make a motion to add a motion to new business?
Yes, but you have to amend. Your first motion has to explain what that motion is.
Okay.
So a motion to amend the agenda to X. If that motion passes, then that motion that resolution would be added to new business.
It's like common core board procedure.
I'm trying to make sure it gets done right. That's
and if it doesn't pass, then
it's done, right.
Okay.
So
all right.
You're making a motion to amend the agenda to include the following matter on the agenda.
Okay.
Resolution that the board, whatever you want the board to review, you know, what To vote on.
To vote on. Okay. Okay. So I want to make a motion to add to new business a vote on moving the Common Core Algebra 2 curriculum back to Algebra 2 trigonometry.
Correct.
That's, there's a motion on the table.
Okay.
Okay. Now what?
Now it has to be a second for the motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second for purposes of discussion.
All those in favor?
But we're not in new business.
All we're voting is to discuss it in new business.
Vote for the amendment.
We're discussing to put something in new business in.
Right. But you're not discussing the motion. No, but you have to vote on
this. This is just to get it into new business?
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So all those in favor in having this discussion in new business?
I'll agree to having discussed in new business.
There you go.
Right. That's it. So now it goes into new business.
Okay.
Good. So now we'll pick that up
so
in new business.
So you amended your agenda to include the file that matter in new business for a vote.
Cool. And then it'll also be after public discussion, so we'll hear what the public has to say. Next comes state aid.
State aid. Okay.
I'm going to... We all heard from the governor. He was, it's great that we got the announcement about our state aid, because as we begin to develop our budget, it's wonderful to know that we know what our revenue is. But we will discuss what it really means for us. Not good.
Okay. Took a little liberty with this presentation. Instead of just focusing on state aid, there's been a lot going on with our revenue picture and all actually Nassau County school districts in recent months. So I broadened this out a little bit to talk both about tax levy and also state aid, because those are our two main revenue sources here in Plainview Old Bethpage. And the story begins back in the summer and fall, when Nassau County sent this notification that they are reducing our tax levy. And they sent this notification out to all school districts in Nassau County due to a change in law that capped tax growth on certain LIPR properties. So Nassau County reduced the school district's tax levy by about $2.2 million. And at that time, we were told that money was still going to come to us in the form of a payment in lieu of taxes. The first part of that payment, the first half, was supposed to come in November. Just like all other school districts in Nassau County, we're still waiting for that first half payment. And we're not too sure when or if it will come. LIPA has not made any payments to any school districts on this. Nassau County has stated that the payments in lieu of taxes are not covered by the county guarantee. We're looking for that $2.2 million to balance our 15-16 budget. And much like every other school district in Nassau County. We are trying to figure out whether or not we need to calculate the revised tax levy. It's revised by Nassau County. Calculate our 16-17 tax levy based on that lowered 15-16 tax levy base. The Office of the State Comptroller has not commented at this time because it's a very confusing situation. So at this point, it's hard to calculate what our 16-17 tax levy base will be. But in any case, for 15-16, up to now, we're out $2.2 million. And this revenue issue has the potential to become larger in future years. Then last week, it was announced that the New York tax cap base is 0.12%. And that's based on the last 12 months' consumer price index growth. That's significantly lower than past years. So in the bottom left-hand corner, you can see that last year, the percentage that tax cap growth was based on was 1.62%. The year before that was 1.46%. And then the 2 years prior to that were both 2%. So essentially, tax cap growth or tax levy growth is as close to zero as you can possibly get without actually being zero. Just to refresh your memory, we also have to look at things that come in that are deductions to the tax levy calculation. For example, pilots. If any additional pilots come in, then that is a subtraction from next year's potential tax cap, along with any additional state building aid that we might get. Going back a few further days in time, Andrew Cuomo gave a State of the State address. Soon afterwards, his version of the state aid runs came out. And at first glance, it looks very favorable. He allocates about $1.1 million more in state aid to Plainview Old Bethpage in 16-17 than 15-16. But if you take a close look at the proposal, you can see there's actually no new money. Except for a 30% restoration, and I put that in quotes on purpose, it's a restoration of a gap elimination adjustment of about $330,000. The rest of the increased state aid is completely from expense-driven categories, meaning that it's aid generated in existing formula aid, not anything that is new in the governor's budget. Simply, it is the current aid formulas running. So we see an increase in BOCES aid because we did have a slight uptick in expenses from BOCES in 15-16. And likewise, you can see increases in high excess cost aid and public private excess cost aid. Those are two areas that are special education expenses. So increased special education expenses generate increased state aid at about a 30% rate, so 30 cents on every dollar we spend, we get back in aid there. And transportation aid is up slightly, once again, due to increased expenses. So there's no new money for Plainview in state aid. So we are actually very concerned about our state aid picture. We also saw this. If you dug out your newspaper at the end of your driveway on Saturday, you found this at the end of your driveway, or perhaps got spit out at the end of your snowblower on Sunday. but we saw this big red headline that we are concerned that there will be some reduction to federal aid to schools due to New York State's opt-out rate of fewer than 95% of New York State students sitting for the exams. It's not a definite, and that's where it's the threat of reduction. And for Plainview Old Bethpage, that threat of reduction is $125,000 less, which paints this worst-case scenario. If we have to reduce our 16-17 tax levy by $2.2 million as compared to 15-16, and the Title I funds don't come through, and the state aid figures stay the same as proposed by Governor Cuomo, then we're opening the 16-17 school year with about $1.25 million less in revenue than we did in 15-16. and that is the rosy picture painted by the business office at this time. Now, I do note this is a worst-case scenario. We do need, and there is going to be a lot of information going back and forth to school districts on the pilot issue with LIPA. Of course, the state aid battle has begun up in Albany, and there has been no final word on the federal portion of state aid up to now. Are there questions?
Thank you. We are, and I think we have a resolution or had a resolution. We will be entering into litigation with other districts who will join to litigate the LIPA issue. We believe that we are owed that money. This is very serious. This is a lot of money for Nassau County districts. By the way, we're the only county in the state that has this problem. So when state aid is grim, people, you know, nobody knows. I mean, GEA, everyone understands the GEA, that was money that the governor borrowed from us when the state coffers were low. And now that the state has excess money, they should be giving it back to us. They owe us over $1 million. They are giving us $300,000. So that's a $700,000 deficit that they owe. And I believe Senator Flanagan has stated that he is going to go after that. And we should be contacting our legislators and making sure that they are fighting for us. But I believe, and Lobby Day is in March, and I'll be there and I'll be lobbying for that. I'm joining the others. And we have the legislative breakfast. Kathy, when is it? February 7th, and it's going to be at Jericho. So we should all be sure to lobby for that. But LIPA is a unique situation for Nassau County schools. No other county has that problem. That's huge, because it's not just about the $2.1 million for next year. It's 2.1 for this year. So it has the potential of reducing our levy. So if it reduces our levy, next year we begin with a levy that's 2.1 under what we actually put out in our budget. That's huge. That's a $4.2 million deficit, if you think about it, because it's 2.1 this year and 2.1 next year. It's huge. So we are, as I said, we're going to be litigating that to make sure that we do get that back. But that was a worst-case scenario. We're hoping that we'll get some more GEA. But you have to be active. You have to attend the legislative breakfast. You have to write letters to your assembly people and state senators. We need to bring that money home. Thank you.
Rich put up the... Mr. Kanye put up the picture from the Newsday article, which, you know, was definitely published to be a little sensational and to make headlines. But I just want to applaud our superintendent, Dr. Lewis, and all the education leaders who wrote and signed the letter calling on our elected officials to make sure that this doesn't happen, that the federal aid doesn't get cut. I'm terrified at the thought of a vindictive John King trying to punish Long Island for his own failures as New York Commissioner of Education. And that's how Cuomo operates. That's the script. So we also have a current commissioner who refuses to rule out the possibility of withholding aid in response to parents exercise their right to opt their children out of these high-stakes tests. The biggest shame of this all is that the poorer, lower-performing districts on Long Island are facing the risk of an enormous loss of federal aid, while wealthier, higher-performing districts like ours with high opt-out rates have only a little federal aid to lose. And even though it's just $100,000, it is putting a whole system at risk that's much bigger. Do I think this is going to happen? No. Do I think low enough of John King to think he'll try to do it? Yes.
So I wanted to just address a different piece of it, and that's the tax cap. 1978 in California, there was a proposition, Proposition 13, and it's a measure which had cut property taxes, for those that don't know, and limited the growth rate of future assessments to 2% each year. The result, revenues to municipalities dramatically declined. Local governments, schools especially, had to rely on the state's general fund, which correlated directly in a shift in power. The revenue-starved state government didn't keep up with its obligations. Programs and services were negatively impacted. Today, 37 years later, California has the highest pupil-to-teacher ratio in the nation and continues to rank in the bottom 10 states for the delivery of public education. Unfortunately, that story sounds all too familiar here in New York. Clearly, Cuomo and our New York State legislators haven't learned the lessons of California. The tax levy cap, in my personal opinion, is an ill-conceived idea which hinders school districts and their ability to provide the quality education and services that our communities deserve. Here in POB, smart budgeting has permitted us to stay below the tax cap while maintaining and, in some cases, expanding upon our programs and services. The budgeting techniques are the same budgeting techniques that were criticized by the most recent audit, but they have allowed POB to weather the recession and our most recent fiscal difficulties without having to make the same kind of cuts in personnel, infrastructure, and programs that our neighboring districts on Long Island have had to make. Each year, it becomes more difficult with greater unfunded and underfunded mandates. And with a state government that has still not returned its money, as we mentioned, that it took several years ago, this year looks to be even more tricky. We're going to be starting our budget season shortly. And it's my hope and expectation that we'll be able to manage through this year and get our educational affairs addressed within the tax levy cap, where all of our programs and our services are maintained and where appropriate can be improved upon. But there may come a time, it could be this year, could be next year, or even the year after, where in order to maintain class sizes, in order to maintain the programs and services, we're going to have a serious conversation about piercing the cap. That will require us to work closely with all of you, all of our stakeholders, our parents, our teachers, our administrators, the community at large, and ask the community to support our future. I look forward to our budget deliberations. I appreciate Mr. Cunningham's rosy picture. It's a scary, scary thought. The people that we have to blame are up in Albany, in my personal view. I think they took a very short-sighted approach to make headlines, and at the end of the day, it's another cut at local control. So I think we need to go to the legislative breakfasts. We need to keep up and ramp up speaking to our legislators, writing the letters, going to our NISBA conference and trying to move our lobbying efforts up in Albany, because at the end of the day, I really do believe that the tax levy cap is a primary factor in the difficulties of many of our school districts.
Two years ago, Board of Education, PTA members, administrators, PCT, we went up to Albany to lobby to let everybody know our thoughts. And I think there are about 10,000 people. Unfortunately, we have to go on a day when they're in session, and we have to have our voices heard. But this is an assault against public education. When you see monies that are going to go to charter schools, the different advantages that charter schools have, it is a very, very sad day when you think about most of the people who have been very successful have gone to public schools, gotten their degrees and everything else, and now all of a sudden public education has become a dirty word. We have more non-funded mandates thrust upon us year after year after year. We have needier children. We're sitting here today talking about Algebra 2, whatever, and we're fortunate enough that we have options to still talk about. 2 years from now, we may not have some of these options. We have to start looking at us as a community. We have to start to really use our voices united, because the island gets slaughtered. No matter how much we give in taxes, 64% of taxes come from the island and we get back 17%. Something is very wrong. But when children's voices are being silenced, when looking at increased in class sizes, when we talk about the arts and music and fighting to keep them alive and things that make children Renaissance kids, looking at them in the back and saying, we don't know if we can do it. If we can't find a day to lobby, we have to make enough noise that people start to hear that every single student's voice counts. A lot of people who are making these decisions have never sent their kids to public school. They've been in private schools. And when you look at what charter schools don't have to do, what they're not held accountable for, we're not even talking apples to apples any longer. And to turn around and to look at something as dire as that, and looking and saying, if we lose that $125,000 in federal aid, when we only have $110,000 to play with, we're already then in a deficit. And then it starts to spiral down. People work here. Our kids go here. We want to provide the best education possible. But the only way we can keep doing this is to look at that year 2017, 2018. They want us to eat up all of our reserve funds. And then they're going to yell at us that we're failing schools because we don't have enough funds. And then when you have to start increase class sizes and doing other things that go very bleak, other school districts have had a look at it. They've cut sport teams. They've cut all-day kindergarten. They've done different things to try to make it look. We as the adults in this situation have to take full responsibility. We have to lobby. We have to inundate every single office up there and let them know the island isn't going to stand for it. We're not going to be sacrificial lambs for people who just really don't like public education any longer.
Seth and Ginger, fantastic. I mean, you guys really nailed it on what the problem is.
Well, there's one thing, you know, you talk about piercing a tax cap, and when you had something to lose, it becomes a risk. But the truth of the matter is we could be facing numbers where we're below zero. Well, if you come up with a number where your tax cap is below zero, there's absolutely no risk in piercing it. And I would even argue that, you know, if you get stuck with another 0.12, you know, there's no risk in piercing it. So, you know, I don't think it's any one school district, but I think if these numbers continue coming the way they're coming, you know, that's the real way that you beat them at their own game. And that is, you know, you say enough is enough and you just do what's right for your community. I'm not saying ridiculous numbers, but our community has never had a problem supporting a budget at 2 or 3%. I mean, we've been getting 60% approvals for numbers that are in those reasonable levels. So I'm not suggesting we do it now, but I think we really have to start thinking about when the time's going to come, because I don't see these guys up in Albany ever getting this thing straight, and they're just going to keep assaulting us. And what Ginger said is really what kills, and what Seth said. We got yelled at for being fiscally responsible because they want to have us be bankrupt. They want to drive the schools out of business so they can take the money for other areas and things that are more important. I know we as a community will not allow that to happen, and we as the board will protect what we have at this district. And while we're talking about gloom and doom here, we will do what we have to protect our children. You can count on, I think I speak for everyone, that we're not going to go down without one hell of a fight.
But we need help.
We actually have a good thing to talk about. Good job, Seth.
Yes, thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak about something very, very good that has come back. Nassau County has reinstituted POP officers, problem officer-oriented policing, and this sprung up really in December. And quite suddenly, we didn't know it was coming, and then we were contacted by an officer that we know pretty well in Nassau County, Sergeant Brim, who had been a POP officer. I actually knew him from working in Western Nassau. And now Plainview Old Bethpage actually has 4 POP officers, but they split the second precinct into 2 zones, the Southern Division and the Northern Division. So Old Bethpage is the only school in the Southern Division, so they have 2 officers assigned. And then the other schools in the district are in the northern area, so they have 2 officers. Now, these officers aren't only working in Plainview Old Bethpage. They work in all school districts in other areas in Nassau County. But they really are geared to working on things along what their name says. So they are in contact with schools. We call them. We tell them about trends we're seeing with students or within the community. And also with their information, they're able to compare what's going on in other school districts or other areas, even if it's in the Plainview Old Bethpage community, and start putting things together. They attend our safety meetings. So we had a district-wide safety meeting, and there was an officer there. And recently, I think it was last week, you had 1 officer, 2 officers at Old Beth for a health and safety meeting where they conducted tabletop exercises with the faculty. And they have visited our high school administration, I think, at least twice. And I know we've been in contact with them. They don't really get involved with things like, let's say we are in an emergency situation. They are not the ones who might call us and say, go into a lockout or a lockdown. That's not their role. But they are our liaison with the precinct. So as we update our safety plans, if we redo school maps, they bring them back to the precinct and they're stored there. And they also give us the advice and recommendations based on best practice. So we're very excited that Nassau County has brought this program back, and it has had a great benefit to communities and schools in particular in the past, and we're looking forward to that relationship going forward.
Thank you. Any thoughts, comments? And now we get to our reports. We thank everyone. We understand it's been a long night, but we've got some very important reports, the first of which is on the what are we doing first? Kindergarten transition.
While they get ready, I just want to thank Mr. Sesney and the elementary principals, the kindergarten teachers, the PCT, everybody that's been involved in this transition so far. It's been absolutely fantastic. It's been a pleasure working with all of them, and I just want to say that because they deserve a lot of credit for the work that's been going on. They've been absolutely fantastic. So, Greg, when you're ready.
So, good evening. I want to thank Vince also. I want to thank my colleagues, my administrative colleagues, and I want to thank the teachers at the Kindergarten Center who have helped move this along and made this whole thing happen. So, kindergarten transition 2016-17. The first thing we wanted to say was, where did we begin? We actually began last year towards the end of the year with lots of different meetings between the elementary principals and central office when we started thinking about what this would start to end up looking like. One of the most important pieces for me was the piece about teaching and learning. In 2014 and 15, we had a K-1 transition program that followed the year before when we had a 4-5 transition program. It was an opportunity for teachers to get together to talk about students. Kindergarten teachers went to the elementary schools and looked at first grade classrooms. And first grade teachers came down to the kindergarten and saw who the kindergarten teachers were. It was a very successful time, and it helped us sort of pave the bridge that was going to be going between the kindergarten and first grade. This year I wanted to work on professional development with the kindergarten teachers so that we could help align what was going on in the elementary schools and make the transition for the teachers as seamless as possible. In literacy, we worked in guided reading and foundations and benchmarking. And in mathematics, we were able to have a K-2 progressions in numbers in base 10. And we also have some teachers who are exploring the addition module at the kindergarten center this year. The mathematics was particularly nice because we had the K-1 and 2 together. And any time that you have an opportunity to communicate and talk about what you're learning and what you're dealing with and who your people are, it's always, as far as I'm concerned, a good thing. That's the list of some of the people who have been working on this together. Those are many of the people, and there are still lots of other people out there as well. We started meeting in October, we had meetings in November, we had meetings in December, and we had meetings in January. We had the elementary principals, we had central office, we had elementary PTA, we had the kindergarten teachers, we had the Plainview Congress of Teachers, and my PTA, and Bonnie McGowan, who's doing registration. So this really has been an all-hands-on-deck situation. Everyone's been working together. Some of the things we talked about in those meetings were budget and materials, staffing, facilities and technology, and most importantly, the children and the parents. So where are we now? It's winter, it's cold, it's after Christmas, and we're on the move. We started talking about the budget materials. It was decided in meeting with, and Vince, jump in whenever you want to here. It was decided in a meeting with the elementary principals and with Rich and with Vince that we would take the current K-Center budget, what it was, and basically just split it among the four elementary schools. I decided that the current classroom furniture and materials will go with the classroom teachers. So basically, if this is your classroom, it's all going to the new place that you go to, and they'll do away with whatever they need to when they get there. That will leave my building clean and empty. I have met with the directors and the chair people to work with their departments on inventory and dividing materials. They are all working with my art teachers, with my ASL teacher, with my music teacher, and with my PE teachers to make sure that any equipment that we have is first inventoried, getting the bad stuff disposed of, and then having those good pieces parceled out to each elementary school. The library was a different story because you have to have library books available to children throughout the year. I have worked with Carolyn Talone, who was quite happy to. She has a great plan. She's been working with the all five elementary principal, elementary librarians to develop a plan to distribute the books and the materials. She'll be working with Follett. This is quickly. Follett actually has a way to take the inventory of the kindergarten center and then look at the inventories of the books of all the elementary schools and then using that database figure out what in the K Center should go to Old Beth, Pasadena, Parkway, and Stratford Road. So Carolyn and I are working on that as well as the librarians.
As for the staffing, we took a number of different avenues to go down this. We have one, a mechanism in place through our collective bargaining agreement that allowed us to work with the teachers and to get input from them through a survey that we had with the teachers as to where they would like to be, what information they'd want. Greg and I met with the staff along with his assistant, Ms. Yerk, to really talk to them, answer their questions, get the feedback from the teachers as to the whole transition and what's going on. So as part of the mechanism that we use, the teacher placements we were able to provide in December were for the classroom teachers and some of the support teachers. But the special ed, the reading teachers, the special area teachers, that mechanism for placement will run through our standard staffing process as we figure out where the needs of the students are and where they're going accordingly. The teacher placements are tentative because there are some other mechanisms that allow for some changes that may have to make. For example, if we don't have as many kindergartners enroll, how do we adjust those assignments and so forth? The teachers that we're able to provide the assignments to, or tentative assignments to, we have. And the next slide will show you some tentative assignments for those teachers. And the remainder of the faculty and the staff, as we go through the staffing process and the budget process, will be determined and they'll be notified as quickly as we can do that. The next slide gives you the breakdown by four buildings of the four kindergarten teachers. We are planning 16 sections. We are looking at four per building. But again, the registration process is just currently underway, and that may shift or change depending on the actual enrollment. But those are the teachers as they would be, as where they would be currently based on the mechanism that's in place. Okay?
Yep, that's it. Next, we looked at facilities and technology. Myself, Mrs. Clark, my assistant, Mrs. York, Mrs. Winters, and Mr. Horath, my head custodian, have been working on a plan to pack and store the case center materials that need to be moved. We are consciously aware that we have to store the stuff before we start sending it out to everyone else. So we have quite a plan, color-coded, where we're going to be putting the boxes in the building, Stratford Road and Kindergarten Center, to stage it before it's moved on to the elementary schools at the end of the school year. Teachers have begun the process of cleaning and inventorying their classroom materials. We'll be packing in phases to maintain the integrity of the classrooms. It's very important to me that kindergarten classrooms remain kindergarten classrooms throughout the school year. And we are taking a look at how we can do that. So one of the ideas is that the teachers will take the materials that they've used during the first half of the year and pack it up, anything that they, or Halloween stuff, or no, social studies things, or any materials that they've used the first 3 months, pack it up, get that out of the classroom, and then have everything still available. So a phased process of sort of coming down. In the elementary schools, principals have been reviewing their building plans and working with their head custodians to make sure that everything is in place for the bringing in of the elementary the kindergarten teachers and the kindergarten children. We have ongoing discussions with Andy Ward about the physical classroom needs, and we are also continuing discussions with Dr. Ladico to plan for the technology needs of the elementary schools.
Greg, if I could just... With those discussions, it was important that we brought both Mr. Ward, Mr. Cunningham, and Dr. Ladico into that, because we had some changes to the classrooms that existed that we needed to make and make sure they had it. Then we had preferences from the administrators of the building, the principals, that they'd like to see some changes. So it's important to get both of those people, along with Mr. Cunningham, involved, and they were gracious and very helpful in starting that process. We looked at it as the move doesn't occur over the summer. The move really occurs now, that transition, and we want to make sure that we're ready. So they've really worked nicely with everybody. So thank you.
Yep. Next is our children and our parents. A couple of different things that have been in place for the kindergarten center, just a little change for now. Everything that had happened in the kindergarten center is now going to be happening in the elementary schools. So registration, the census has begun. It is available online at online on the K-Center page as well as the main web page of the school district. If you know anyone out there who has a child who was born in 2011, please encourage them to register their child so our numbers can be as close as possible. As soon as Bonnie McGowan gets the census, she lets the elementary schools know, and they send out a packet to those parents. That used to happen straight through the K-Center. Now it's happening in the different elementary schools. District registration began in January. Orientation, another change. Incoming kindergarten parents will be having an orientation in the elementary schools in March. And the incoming kindergarten children, where we used to at the Case Center have it at the end of August, the children would come in. Our children are going to come in now in May or June so that they are able to see what the elementary schools look like as they are in process of learning and teaching. Kindergarten screening is something we do every year for all the kindergartners who come in. It was always done at the kindergarten center before. My teachers at the Case Center are... training the teams at the elementary schools in the DIAL, which is the program that we use for screening the children. And the elementary schools will be having screening taking place in their buildings in May and June. What's next?
What's not?
Right? So February going forward, things we still need to talk about and are working on. Schedule. Right now, the school hours, time of periods, when the periods will be in the elementary schools. We have ongoing discussions with transportation to make sure that all of our children have the right bus, and we know where the stops are, and we have enough buses to deal with what we believe will be about another 300 children onto elementary school buses. We have to talk about lunch and recreation. We've been talking to Whitson's and also about our playgrounds. We will continue talking about staffing, where we're going to be going as we continue moving ahead. We also need to work on the student management system, Infinite Campus, School Messenger, our web pages. We're also doing a lot with our actual hard copy records that we need to box up and end up sending out to the elementary schools. And finally, delivering of the materials. And finally, just this is something that I think this is going to happen. That actually says project behind that picture. So this is something that I had worked on. I'm working on with the teachers. It's the Legacy Project. It's basically an opportunity to celebrate what has gone on in the kindergarten center, to give the kindergarten teachers an opportunity to have a voice and be able to speak to the elementary principals and their elementary colleagues on what kindergarten is, what kindergarten means, and how kindergartners are not first graders, but very special people. There has been a tremendous amount of work that has gone on in the 20 years at the Kindergarten Center that must be honored and brought forward. So that's something that Ms. York and I and the teachers will be working on. Any questions? Ginger. Sorry, I don't say anything.
I know that there's a computer lab off the kindergarten library.
So,
you want
rock, paper, scissors?
What do you want to say? Go for it.
So what our thinking is right now, the computers in there are a couple of years old now. We're thinking about maybe that space as a part of the PD area for what we'll use now and use it as part of a professional development area and workplace. So, and when they age out, we'll look at that space as to whether or not it stays as a computer space or maybe we re-opt it as something else going forward. But given that it's set up that way and then maybe we can do some training, whether it be Excel training or some online training for our teachers or professional staff, we're thinking that we'll use it that way at this point.
Yes. Yes.
Through our CPSC, we do CPSC meetings starting now, actually, on the children who are coming in who we believe have special needs. Those determinations of where they'll be housed or where they'll be enrolled will actually take place at their meetings. So our enrollment actually depends on how those meetings turn out. The thought process is now, I believe, and I'll go out there and say it, that our special education children will still go to Stratford Road School. That would be where their school would be, and continue on that way. Mm-hmm.
Well, great job. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Next we have...
Okay, at this time, I'd like to invite Mr. Dennis to the microphone. And I just want to acknowledge Victoria Rosenthal and the community and the audience tonight who helped with the presentation. Rob is going to present an idea that with a group of administrators and some of our teachers throughout the district, an idea that came up that we actually heard through our partners in ZSpace, a hackathon, which is a huge coding event that's taking place out in California. And then through social media and Twitter, we actually read about it happening here in New York. With that said, I want to applaud Mr. Dennis for following immediately up on the suggestion. I mean, immediately the next day, he reached out to We Connect the Dots, which is the organization that supports this initiative. As you know, the board goals has really been to kind of push some of the computer science and the coding over the past 2 years, which Mr. Bowen has really embraced and forwarded along with the principals and, of course, the teachers. It's taken off. We've done some parent nights. And this is just honestly moving it to the next level. So, Mr. Dennis, I'm going to let you kind of explain what a hackathon is and what it would entail in plain view.
So, like Ms. Girosh said, hackathon is a nationwide idea that has taken off, particularly in the last year. And as recently as January 8th, Walt Whitman High School in the South Huntington School District was interested in participating and hosting the first Long Island-wide hackathon. Hackathon is an offshoot organization or offshoot idea from an organization called We Connect the Dots that's based in South Huntington. And their goal is to promote problem-solving and computer literacy amongst teenagers. So South Huntington School District reached out to Long Island high schools, grades 9 through 12, and said, can we team up and offer a high school experience for these students? And when some of my colleagues and I heard about this, we thought it would be a great idea to bring to the middle school level. So we're actually going to be the very first school district in the entire country to host a hackathon at the middle school level. There are a number of school districts that are interested in joining us to see what the event would look like and then roll that out for their middle school students. This is just some words that the hackathon promotes. One thing central to the hackathon is the idea of community and the idea of combining resources to drive a project that would be interesting for students. This event will teach students problem solving through web design, and also I think one of the biggest learning outcomes for students, not only is web design, but advocacy. So later on in the presentation, we'll hear about how students will solve a local, national, or global problem and use technology to not only advocate for that problem, but perhaps solve the problem. We're going to, at our hackathon, since it's a one-day event, focus on web design. So we're going to use the platform of Squarespace to teach students how to create their own website. Hackathon does encourage a BYOD atmosphere. So by this point in the spring, we are very hopeful that our students will be able to bring their one-to-one devices with them. We'll be able to have our carts available. And even if a student doesn't have a device, they'll be able to bring their laptop, and we'll have our district computers in the computer labs. We Connect the Dots is a 501c3 non-for-profit organization, and it provides mentors and computer science experts that lead the day's activities. One thing that I particularly like about this, that the slide says, that learning doesn't only occur in isolation. Learning doesn't occur in isolation. It's one of the many facets of the program to involve a lot of different curricular areas. We Connect the Dots, in addition to technology, also focuses on a business model. So one of the first activities that the students will participate in is mind mapping. So the industry experts from computer science and also from the business world will teach students that when they go to get a job, frequently one of the first activities that a team will work on to introduce themselves and to introduce their peers and discuss their strengths and weaknesses is mind mapping. So I think that's a pretty important opportunity for the students as well. They'll learn team building and some interpersonal skills. It's okay, you're messing me up now. Go back one. Okay, we did this one. Next one. This is the mission statement from We Connect the Dots. They're excited about informing students about the variety of different STEAM careers. They provide awareness and education of 21st century workforce skills. So that's something that students will focus on throughout that afternoon and morning. A lot of people talk frequently about what 21st century skills are, and We Connect the Dots advocates not only digital literacy, which they argue is the fundamental skill that anybody will need in the workforce in the 21st and 22nd centuries, but also leadership, entrepreneurship, and problem-solving skills. Our goals are to continue to develop and nurture those 21st century skills that teachers instill within students on a daily basis, to integrate STEAM experiences and project-based learning, and to provide students with the opportunity to hone in computer programming skills while analyzing, evaluating, and synthesizing information. This is a video from an example of a hackathon. This was the one that took place in January. So those were just some images of the types of activities that students will participate in. Sorry, guys. It's okay. Yep. Okay. So the details of our event, we're planning to have our hackathon for the middle school students, grades 5 through 8, at the high school. The reason we chose that venue was because of its structured environment, but in the location of the cafeteria, the auditorium, the library, and the variety of computer spaces available for students be on April 2nd from 9 a.m. to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Students would be from both middle schools. It's open to grades 5 through 8, and actually we are encouraging students when teams are formed to have a variety of middle schools on each team. Lunch will be provided. We're going to be working with community vendors and restaurants to have lunch provided for all the students. We're hoping to be able to have T-shirts given out to students as well. And something that's really important to the We Connect the Dots organization is the idea of one of those 21st century skills, advocacy. So in order to participate in the event, they require that students fundraise. So we're asking that they fundraise $15 for registration. That fundraising could be they do a car wash for somebody, they do a bake sale. If people find that they don't have the time to fundraise, then parents can absolutely just write a check for $15. But one of the skills that the program tries to teach is advocacy for a certain problem.
So I want to be clear here. It does say the curriculum office will pick up the remaining funds. It's about $7,000 for the day, no matter how many students attend. So again, there's some they require that the students pay a portion of it, so the district can't pay the whole cost of it. We do have the funds within the curriculum budget to pick up the remaining costs.
This is an example of what our agenda would look like. We'd have registration until around 9 o'clock. Then we'd have that mind mapping and team building that we discussed. Then an introduction for about an hour to what Squarespace is. Then another team building activity. Then another hour of Squarespace and web design. Then lunch. And then students will have about 3 hours to work on a group project. So one of these, a project, they have to solve a local problem or a global problem. So the global problem that the group might choose to solve is hunger. So students have to research hunger and figure out how they can advertise hunger as a global problem by using technology, and then use technology to advocate for that problem and come up with possible solutions. Student teams are generated using a computer-based algorithm. The program wants to make sure that there is a diverse representation from two genders, the age, grades 5 through 8, and people's skills in coding and visual arts. Teams will work with industry experts, and we're also working with some of the high school classes and clubs to make sure that there's one high school student to help out each of the groups. So they have high school ambassadors that probably enrolled from some computer science electives. These are just some results from people's knowledge of computer skills before a hackathon. Most people had no knowledge of what computer skills, computer programming was like and how it was used for their career. But then after hackathon, clearly there was a greater knowledge of what those skills were. We've worked with a lot of different people within the district, various administrators, teachers, librarians, buildings and grounds, the PTA. We'll hopefully be working with parents and the high school volunteers.
Okay, so as Rob explained in the beginning, the organization is called We Connect the Dots. One of the other programs that the non-for-profit offers is this Discovery Day, which is scheduled for March 30th. It's in partnership with Microsoft. One of the lead people who organizes the hackathon used to work at Microsoft, so she's partnered with Microsoft in a lot of the work for school districts. And in this case, this is really an experiential day at the Microsoft offices in Manhattan. The agency has allowed us to bring 25 students that day. We just have to pay for the transportation. Students need to bring their lunch. But as you can imagine, it's quite an experience for kids to be in those offices that day. It is only one day, but they take tours. They meet with industry experts. There's little presentations and seminars that day. I understand it's a phenomenal experience. With that said, they also have these 10-day experiential learning programs, which it's like a summer camp for 10 days. There's two sessions that they run in the summer. It's about $1,000 per child. And again, this is going back to those Microsoft offices to basically work with the Microsoft engineers and computer science people, and I think this in itself is second to none. They're offering us some spaces for our students. They're really, really encouraging a diverse group of students, not just our computer science kids right now, but for students who might not have explored computer science, particularly addressing females and kids of all ages. So this is open to eighth graders through high school. And then I'm going to ask Mr. Bowenquick to jump in just to kind of tie this all together with our coding initiative for the remainder of the year.
Okay, so just piggybacking off the ambassadors, you know, I've spoken to all the computer science teachers. And basically the ambassador's role is really to help facilitate discussions in the problem-solving groups. So we're trying to get, it really depends on how many students we have as part of this. And then we'll also, as Ms. Girash said, we're really trying to find other students that are not in our computer science courses, have an interest in going to Microsoft and doing some work. So after midterms are over, we're going to sort of highlight some of that information, but that's on hold for right now. I just wanted to give a quick highlight of what has occurred. At the last presentation, I didn't speak too much about the coding. We did a big presentation last year, but this year alone, we've had a good jump in students. Pretty much every student, K-6, has completed an hour of code. So we're looking at about 1.5 million lines of code that have been written by these youngsters, which is great to see. I got some feedback from principals, teachers. Their biggest positive was that not only the half hour, 40 minutes that they did that coding was hearing from the students a day later, 2 days later, even a week later, that the students are now advancing within the code.org system or another system and completing more code. So it's definitely reaching all those computers, which is great. We began, I just want to highlight, on the week of computer science ed, which is December 7th. So we did it for about 3 weeks prior to the break. And then since then, we've done a little bit here and there in the middle schools. But our high school numbers went up, our K-6 numbers went up. I definitely want to give a shout-out again to Ms. Talone and her crew. They've really helped support a lot of the rollout for this, as well as the tech aides that work with Guy Ladico. So, and we have two middle school coding clubs, which are a great success. We've had anywhere from 15 to 40-plus kids show up for one of those sessions. So, again, I think trying to bring it back to the middle school, elementary schools, getting the momentum is definitely going to bring some great things down the line.
Mr. Dennis and Mr. Bowen, thank you so much, and the team of administrators and teachers who really have been behind this idea of a hackathon. And I know I spoke with some other districts who actually explored the idea but weren't willing to kind of take the risk and undertake it. So I'm sure it's going to be successful knowing the people that are behind it.
How are we going to communicate this to parents?
So some of it already has, the concept has been presented to the PTAs through the principals at their PTA meetings. We actually had a representative from We Connect the Dots meet with us. She will be actually, she and another representative will be touring the facility. And then after that meeting, more information will go out to parents. But we'll have a flyer, registration materials. Like I said, we've already asked the PTA if they would partner with us for some of this, and they've been extremely supportive. So we'll use all of those venues.
Great. You spoke about the 25 students. How will they be selected?
We have not decided that yet. Okay. But again, I want to be very clear on this. It has to be a diverse group of students. And again, they're looking for kids that might not be your typical kids in a computer science class. So
which I think is a great. We'll
probably have some type of application process and then look at the profile of those kids to make sure they meet the needs of the We Connect the Dots mission.
Okay. And finally, Is it possible that the student ambassadors from the high school be given community service?
Typically, if we have students working on a weekend or after school, they can be provided that. I want to also be clear that although we might ask some of our computer science kids to be helping out, one of the things that we Connect the Dots does, after kids participate in the Discovery Day or the camp, the 10-day, they have those kids actually partner with them. They become student ambassadors. So we Connect the Dots will be bringing their own student ambassadors that day, kids who have participated in other districts. So they kind of network, which is really nice for the kids.
Sure. Thank you.
This is all amazing. All of it is fantastic. Just one question with the Connect the Docs. Is there a maximum amount of kids since it's...
So about, I think it's 143 or 148 kids can participate that day.
Okay. So it'll be first come, first serve kind of a thing.
Yes, for the... Hackathon Day, yes.
So how would students sign up for it?
We'll have a registration process, probably through Google Forms, and kids will be notified all at the same time. But
can Board of Ed members come and watch?
Absolutely. We welcome you all to attend.
That I don't think you can do.
Great job, guys. It's really wonderful to see how coding and all these efforts are really taking root in the district. I think our kids are loving it. Keep up the good work and keep bringing us more fun stuff.
Okay, I'm going to invite Ben Wiley, our Director of Art and Digital Instruction, to come up to speak about an update on our one-to-one initiative at the middle schools. Mr. Wiley has put together a very comprehensive report to really take you through where we've been this year since, and I'm going to speak real quickly about our Amplify. Not going to repeat that, but you know, we've abandoned the Amplify rollout, and at this point we've moved on to looking at Chromebook. So, Mr. Wiley, for purposes of the audience tonight and the time, I'm going to ask you to kind of try to run through this as quickly as possible, but you know, thank you so much.
Yep. Happy to be here and sharing this with everyone. I want to thank everyone involved. It truly has been a group effort. A lot of people involved have been at it a lot longer than I have, actually, since July. So thank you. To topics to discuss tonight, overall goals of the program, the background of the one-to-one initiative to date, the introduction to the learning platform that was selected by the committee as well as the device, and the overview of the one-to-one rollout to date and the future of the one-to-one initiative throughout the middle schools and also potentially the high school and the elementary level. So the goals of the project were always aligned to the current Board of Education goals set forth for the district, and these goals were to provide students with the skills necessary to become more proficient 21st century learners and truly prepare them for high school and also for college and career readiness. Additional skills students will acquire while using instructional technology in the classroom are some of those bullets there: develop personal and social responsibility, effectively use critical thinking, reasoning, creativity, increase communication, cross-cultural understanding, visualize concepts and develop decision-making strategies, and also know how and when to use technology and choosing the most appropriate tool for the task. So everything that we've talked about digital citizenship, is part of the goals of the one-to-one initiative here in the district. So the one-to-one initiative background to date: during the late summer and early fall of this school year, the formally created committee of teachers, administrators, support staff, building level administrators, district administrators met to discuss the possibility of implementing a new one-to-one initiative at both middle schools in lieu of the Amplify tablet no longer being an option. So the discussion started, and the one-to-one committees met multiple times. They talked about things like Learn Pads, Google Apps for Education, Chromebooks, Windows Surfaces. Collaboratively together, the group chose to explore Google Apps for Education as the learning platform and using Chromebooks. And steps were taken to get devices in for demos. After that point, and teacher training was at the forefront and prioritized and scheduled throughout all the buildings. And the final bullet there, after multiple committee meetings, more meetings regarding devices, the committee chose to go with the Acer C738T Chromebook was selected for the device. And it's a very exciting, brand new device for the students and teachers to use throughout the middle schools. So I wanted to give you a brief introduction of the platform, Google Apps for Education. Google Apps, as many of you may know, school districts can create user accounts for students and teachers in a closed domain, different than just a private Google account. It's completely free, ad-free. You can collaborate easily over it, cloud-based. Everything is stored via the cloud, so it saves up network space. You can use Google Apps for Education and all of the apps that it has on any device, tablet, or your phone, work anywhere at any time, including offline, which is a great feature. And security, data protection, and data ownership, what we use is our own Google signed a student privacy pledge to reaffirm their commitment to schools. I have a quick video. Do you like me to show it? No, keep going. Google Classroom is an app. It is the learning platform within Google Apps for Education that provides teachers the ability to paperlessly push content to students. So it's really the heart of the program. And it was introduced as a feature of Google Apps for Education in August 2014. So again, it's pretty new, but they continue to make updates to it. Provides teachers the ability to push content to students effectively while also giving them the ability to collect, grade, and comment on student work all through the computer and all through their one-to-one devices. So in the past, students would have to create accounts, teachers would have to create accounts, and they would push content to students via an email. But now the teachers, all they need to do is create a classroom through Google Classroom. The students join, and they can push content, assignments, announcements, right through Classroom. They can hand it in, they can turn it in, and teachers can grade it all right there in one place. It's absolutely an amazing piece of software.
Right, and when the teachers were looking at the Amplify piece, there was some of this available, and that was one of the features through Amplify that the teachers really liked. So again, this falls right in line with that.
So introduction to the device. The Acer C738T Chromebook looks like this. It's made by Acer. It has an Intel Celeron processor. It's very speedy, quick. It has a convertible design, which through the committee meetings, all of the teachers and administrators really wanted this feature for students to be able to touch the screen and move around the screen and use it in different ways. So the Acer C738T can be used as a laptop. You can tent it and put it on a table or a desk, or you could fold it all the way over and use it strictly as a tablet, like an iPad. It's Wi-Fi enabled with the latest wireless technology. Very lightweight, sturdy. They're really the cutting edge to the Google Chromebook line. It's also, you can use this offline through Google Drive and Google Classroom. And when users use it offline, if they don't have Wi-Fi access, they use it and then all of their information is automatically synced once internet connection is restored. So there's the C738T Chromebook. Some additional benefits you can read on the screen there. They're very cost efficient. They're very easy to roll out. The security and speed. The battery life, close to 10 hours or more. I had one of these devices, one of the only ones in the country at the time of demo, and I think it lasted me closer to 12 hours on a full battery. You can share these computers very easily over a cart-based model due to their cloud-based operating system. The admin controls over these Google Chromebooks is very easy to manage. And also teacher control, we're exploring different control models to give teachers the ability to monitor student engagement during class time. So the rollout, the timeline of departure. The step one, always from the very beginning, was to provide teachers with the training. Once we decided on the platform, we could start that right away, because really the device, it could have been anything. So as of right now, each and every fifth and sixth grade teacher in the district, that's content area teachers and specialists, have attended 2 half-day training sessions in-house on the Google platform apps, Google Classroom. It's 10 hours, and you can see the model kind of scheduled there and what we talked about. This learning was great, and the teachers really dove in right away and started to upload their files and folders and assignments into Google Drive and really got excited about the platform. And some of the teachers right now already are starting to create their classrooms, even though we don't have the devices, because that can be done on any computer, either at work or at home. So It's important to note, once we do get the device, we're planning two more half-day sessions. And in those sessions, teachers will have the device on hand. So they're learning the platform on the actual device. And those dates have not been determined as of yet. So additional Google training throughout the district. A number of sessions have been offered to teachers and staff at the high school and elementary level. Although a lot of teachers did attend this, a number of teachers are still in need of training, so we're continuing to push that out into the middle schools and the high schools, teaching teachers about the Google platform, the benefits of Google Drive, and how to really use Google Classroom and integrate that in their classes. One other piece is a website that has been created. It's on our webpage. It's under the Central Office of Technology website. This site was actually created in Google Sites, and it gives teachers the ability to go there and to get information about how to set up an account, how to use Google Drive, how to convert files, Google Forms, Google Classroom, and additional resources are on that site. So that's kind of what it looks like there, and if you have a chance, you should check that out. Step two, the device and distribution of the timeline for fifth and sixth grade teachers. So the devices have been ordered. They have not been delivered as of now. CDW, the third-party vendor that we're working with, will deliver these units fully configured. We just have to inventory them. At that point, the device will be distributed to teachers, and the final training sessions will be scheduled. The training sessions will take place with the devices, and we'll explore more in-depth Google Classroom and Google Drive for the teachers so they understand it more. At that point, once the teachers have gone through the training, we will start delivering devices into the classrooms on a cart-based model. So that way, students and teachers will have the ability to use the device and use Google Classroom in school at first, just to get the hang of it and really learn the platform. Once that's gone through, we will hold a parent meeting, as was held last year with the Amplify tablet, and important information and user agreements will be discussed at this parent meeting. And only after the parent meeting and once the parent and guardians sign off on the device will be distributed to students so that then they can start taking the devices home and to school in their book bags. And finally, the future goals of the program. Next year, we're looking to, as these fifth and sixth graders currently move to sixth and seventh grade, fill that void at the fifth grade level, but also extend the program to the eighth and ninth grade level, creating a one-on-one learning environment for all 5 through 9 grade level students at Plainview Bethpage, and continue to extend teacher training opportunities, obviously, and staff development for teachers. And 2017-18 and beyond, really extend this program even more on the tail end, and provide these devices for 10th, 11th, and 12th grade students. So at that point, all 5 through 12 grade students in Plainview Old Bethpage will have this one-to-one device, and the teacher training will continue, and we'll continue to train administrators, clericals, and all support staff throughout the district. I believe that's it. You have any questions?
So Ben, if someone gets a new device in fifth grade in the future, they would keep that same device their own for the 8 years, or is there a plan like somewhere around the midpoint? Computers don't usually have an 8-year life.
So we spoke about that as the fifth grader coming in now would get that device, but really the lifespan's about 4 years. So we have to look at where we're at. So the high school their tech committee has been working on what platform they want to use. At this point, I don't want to speak for them because I don't have a final recommendation, but they are also looking at the Acer Chromebook as a piece to that. Hopefully during the budget cycle, we'll get that final information. And if that's the case, then we'll have to look at what that second 4-year cycle looks like on the secondary level.
So basically 5th through 8th, you have whatever. And then in the high school, you have, could be the same, a new,
it
the
could
same
be a,
thing,
it could be a
model,
new Chromebook.
Whatever it is.
Right.
We'll determine that when we get there.
And 4 years down the road, as you know, the technology
4 years
will be much different than what
like
it is
this.
Right now. So.
And even to add to that, the platform could stay the same and the device could be different.
Do Chromebooks have a 4-year life expectancy in the hands of students? Has anyone? I'm just asking the question. You know, it's not like you or I, who's a business person who doesn't travel. You know, is 4 years? Do they consider that to be a reasonable life expectancy for the device?
The answer is yes, but you're going to experience a certain percentage of replacements that we're going to have to plan on. The way we have the building-based system set up for a replacement or, if you will, temporary replacement while a piece gets fixed, we'll have that built in, but there'll be a percentage that breaks. I mean, it is what it is, but they have a very good life expectancy. We're figuring 3 or 4 years should be pretty good.
And so when the – I'm sorry for hogging this, guys, but so when the parent signs the agreement, will it be prorated? Like if you smash it in eighth grade, it shouldn't cost you the same thing as if you smashed it the second week of fifth grade. You know, you had it for 3 years.
So one of the things that we talked about with the initial rollout of the pilot and then the planned one of the Amplify was that if it's completely broken, there would be a replacement piece, and we're going to work on what happens if it's a screen or if it's a keyboard piece or something like that and what that value is. It still has to be repaired, Gary, so whatever that repair cost would be and how that insurance or repair cost, we have to work out still.
Cool. And last question by me. As far as the Wi-Fi in the middle schools to be able to hit, you know, all the 5th and 6th graders and then the 7th and 8th down the road in the high school, where are we with really being able to light up all the buildings so that a kid's Chromebook can work no matter where in the building he stands?
So we have the big piece for us is to get the electrical work done in the wiring closet so that we can change the switches out and have the electric we need in there. I believe the vendor has spec'd that out, and within the next couple of weeks we anticipate that being done. Once that's done, Dr. Ladico, who could not be here tonight, he's not feeling well, has indicated that the following weekend we do have to shut the building down to do it. That the following weekend when that electric's done, his guy should be able to go in and do a building to get the buildings done. So once we switch out those switches, we can go live with the additional system.
So 2 weekends, 1 for each middle school?
I don't want to speak for him. It's at a weekend he can get a building done, so I'm assuming yes, but I'd have to verify with Dr. Ladico as to his staffing and how he can get it done.
Not being gloomy, Gus. What does it cost us per grade level?
For the devices?
Yep.
It's about $300 a device plus the services and the cases that we ordered for them each. I don't remember the total cost off the top of my head.
Okay, and I would assume that as we go into the budget process, we're going to be talking about this and how much. This is one of the things that when we looked at that screen, it affects tremendously.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about the incoming fifth grade, the eighth grade, and possibly going into ninth grade, depending on how those discussions go, and we'll talk about all of that and have numbers.
Are we looking for any kind of grants or anything that's out there that might cover anything like this?
I have not looked at any grants or out for any grants like that. The smart bonds money can be used for some of this
as we go forward.
It's your infrastructure has to come first with the smart bonds, and then you can use device because it is gearing up towards the digital testing environment, if you will. So in the future, we'll be able to use some of that going forward. But I have not looked at any grant information yet.
Okay, thanks. Nice job.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wiley.
Whoa, okay. That brings us to public participation. District Policy 1510.1 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall, 1, state their name and address, and 2, indicate on whose behalf they are speaking if a non-resident. The policy prohibits public discussion on matters relating to staff and students that wish their reputation, privacy, or rights to due process, although those of others could in some way be violated. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes, and I'll make the same thing that I've been saying for all these the entire year. Please treat the speakers with respect. Please keep the chatter in the background to a minimum, and let's be kind to each other. Floor is open.
Susan Zoller, 1820 Court, Plainview. I just want to talk to you a little bit about math. I'm beyond really concerned about what's going on. I have 2 children who have been through this Common Core. It's exactly the opposite of what they've sold us as a bill. They told us that it was going to be very involved, very a mile. They're going to learn intensively about everything. And in fact, the reality is it's about a mile wide and a quarter of an inch deep. They're going through stuff in classes. Every day it's something new. There is no time to absorb. There is no time to repeat things. My daughter is no sooner given a test, she's learning something new the next day, and then the test the next day, over and over and over again. I have never seen so many kids in this district going for tutoring. And I'm not talking about tutoring to go from a 92 to a 98. I'm talking about to pass the class. It's horrific. Now let's talk about Algebra 2. Algebra 2, the whole cohort of kids, I would say, based on my experience, are doing somewhere in a middle range of 10 points less than they did on the standard, what I would call Barron's Regents. 10 points less. So you say, okay, but it's a harder class. But in fact, they're really not learning it, because to pass the Common Core, you just needed a 34%. To pass the Barron's Regents, you needed a 64. So clearly they were learning it a lot better than they are now, whether it's harder or not. I'm trying to find polite words to say this, but these kids are getting messed, and I'm using that word messed in quotes, messed over really badly. They are not learning math. We're going to have a whole generation of kids who cannot do math. I'm talking about kids in sixth grade and seventh grade who don't know basic multiplication, addition, and division because they never had to learn it rote in the early grades. And I'm experiencing this. I'm seeing kids over and over again. I ask a seventh grader, what's 5 times 6? They have to sit and think for a minute. They don't know it. And I'm not talking about kids in IEP. I'm not insulting anybody, please. I'm talking about honors kids. Something has to stop at some point. I'm seeing a tremendous push in this district. AP classes, AP classes, AP classes. I got a kid in math, in honors math right now. She's getting an 87 with a tutor 3 times a week, and the teacher is recommending that she go into honors geometry. This is bull. This is not college and high school. It's high school. I want my kids to have high school. You're going to ask that we're going to teach trig again in pre-calc. So we're going to shoehorn trig into another class instead. And then we're going to give them the opportunity to take another Regents in their junior year when they're already taking SATs and ACTs and the Regents is for all the other classes? That's not going to work. You guys keep asking my kid to be the guinea pig. And it's not fair. And it's not just my kid. You're looking at, what, almost 500 kids. Superintendent Lewis said that there's a group of kids that did really well on the Common Core material. And that may be true, but everybody else is doing worse. So are you going to cater to the small group, or are you going to cater to the larger group? Who's going to benefit by this? Because right now, the larger group is not benefiting. Oh, I got 2 more 10 minutes. No? Oh, I'm gone? Okay. And I want to address one thing that you said, Gary. You said it's not just about the GRES grade, that you shouldn't be concentrating on that, that it's not about the grade. And I'm agreeing with you. It's not about the grade. It's about success. It's about learning something. And right now with Common Core, the kids are not learning. They're not. They're internalizing it, they're passing the test, and they're moving on. And it's proven because when they got into honors algebra this year, tons of kids dropped out because they never learned it the first time. And when I brought this up at the big math meeting that discussed honors on the honors curriculum, I was told, yeah, we're having trouble. That's what the teachers are saying. The teachers themselves are standing at the board going, oh, wait a minute, I did this wrong. Let me redo it. Because they don't really know the curriculum. How can you ask these children to do this again? It's just not fair. I'm not only worried about them, I'm worried about the ones still to come that are totally not prepared. Up until now, this school district was sending people to become doctors, to become engineers. It doesn't seem like we're going to be able to keep doing that because these kids don't know math. They don't know basic math. And I need you guys to please consider this, each and every one of you. You are sending kids into the fire for no reason. Please help them.
Susan Stewart, 36 Bluebird Lane, Plainview. So we have an opportunity here to take lemons and make them into our lemonade. The state, the superintendents, other districts, we have all acknowledged there are flaws in the missing Algebra 2 curriculum at this point. We're talking about backfilling with trigonometry into pre-calculus. Still trying to understand what's going to have to move out of pre-calculus so that we can put in the trigonometry. Without that trigonometry, will kids who are in honors level Algebra 2 be able to take an SAT 2 level 1 exam? They've always had to in the past. Not now, because we're going to have to speed up a hard curriculum to begin with. Our teachers already told and prepared our students prior to midterms they're going to speed up the curriculum by 5 days so they can fit in trigonometry so they could be prepared for an SAT 2 exam and for the Algebra 2. As Suzella just pointed out, we are having kids learn something, test on it. They're not retaining it. It's the same thing happened in Algebra 1 and geometry. The difference is we were able to sequence, as you said, because it felt. My son brought home an exam, usually a solid A student, got a very low grade. Yes, it's not about the GPA. I Googled it. Every text that I Googled that exam was pre-calc. Are they learning pre-calc or are they learning Algebra 2? Don't we have to do Algebra 2 before pre-calc? Or is this our best guess to the modeling? There's a flaw in it. We recognize it. We recognize it by asking students to go for sessions outside. We also recognize that we have to balance our students. It shouldn't be all about math. It should be about other passions. Volunteering, doing summer studies for research, because that's the summer that research has to be done for Intel and LICEF and all the other competitions. Are we going to start capstone? They can't take another regions. They're taking the English regions if they're in the AP English in January. Then they're going to have to take a midterm in pre-calculus and a math regions in old material. Think about this before we say we're going to backhole this. Think about the whole big picture. Another thing that was brought up on a thread was NCAA is not recognizing Algebra 2. States that have Common Core, all prior to New York, have had trigonometry as a separate course on its own. Current juniors, so seniors next year, will be saddled with a GPA encompassing of maybe a floor test and a floor. Because for all intents and purposes, your college application grade is your end of junior year GPA. They won't be able to use that better grade possibly in January. Just think of all the pieces. We have an opportunity to possibly help these students. Let them fix the curriculum. We know it's flawed. Let us go with this. I understand what you're saying. Learning for the sake of learning is a great philosophy. Don't disagree with it. But there's a lot at stake. SATs breaking 700s is really important. You know that as for scholarship. ACT doesn't care what College Board does. We know that too. A 35, a 33 is important. So that. Please, please think of all these pieces before we start saying we're backhoeing into another year.
Hello, my name is Laura Campbell. I live at 16 Prescott Place. I'm here because I was moved so much by an experience that my daughter just had this Friday, the day before her SAT test was supposed to be taken. She had 4 midterms in one day, plus over 2 hours of homework. And that was Thursday night, plus she had her SAT tutor. I use A-List, and it's like $300 an hour, some crazy amount of money that I pay for this tutor. Seriously, it is. You can look it up. And she got to bed about 12 o'clock because she could not study anymore. She had a migraine. Her head was pounding. Now, I want to make this very clear. This is not about any of her teachers. She loves them. She had me meet them at parent teachers night. She loves her teachers. This is not about a single teacher. It isn't. She loves them all. This is about who is thinking about 4 tests in a day. And here's the thing. She really, as a student, she's a very studious kid. She didn't get to study for all of the tests like she wanted to. She had to write a couple of papers for ELA. She had to do, and again, please don't make this about a teacher, because it's not. And not just her. Her friends, who were all in those classes. And this, the day before the SAT. Luckily, it was canceled, because it would have been negating the thousands of dollars I've been paying for that 700 score that we're looking at. And scores matter. Every point on this exam matters. I have schools looking at my daughter. She plays soccer nationally. She's going to San Diego. I have colleges looking at her in San Diego. These points matter. It is about a GPA. You can fool yourself and pretend it isn't, but for my daughter, it is. Every point counts. She works so hard for those points, and then to lose them because she was too tired to study, after she studied, I mean, literally all night. Here's my question.
On a day when midterms were not supposed to be given, number one, because midterms hadn't started. So I certainly will look into it.
But I don't want this to be about teachers.
No, but for midterms, when midterms...
Well, here's the thing. It's not just her. What do you do to make it up to these students now? Because here's the problem, is that she's now taking these tests at a big disadvantage. How do you make it up to them? Because, like, everyone walks away and says, sorry, gee, that happened. But my daughter suffers now. And not just her, but the other students. So it's like nobody takes...
No, I'm not saying sorry. I'm saying I have to look into it. You're bringing it to my attention. I will look into it, and I'll get back to you.
I'm sorry. I'm just frustrated because I was with her. And I even offered to help her. You know, and my kids won't let me do that. My son will.
But...
Well, there were three midterms and one pre-midterm test, however you want to phrase that as. And again, I'm trying not, and I could be very specific, but I don't want to be, because, again, I don't want to make this about the classes or the teachers who she loves.
I understand your point about that, but without specifics, we can't address or even investigate the problem. So Pandora's box is open. We will look into your child's schedule. We'll see what tests they actually had, and we'll figure out whether this is... epidemic. It's a little bit isolated.
Well, there were quite a few people who've been complaining about this.
Planning,
this is not new.
We'll bring it in the high school.
I did. I spoke to Mr. Murray.
Now it'll be looked at.
And he said he was going to address it at his next staff meeting. I get that, but that doesn't do anything to remedy these poor students who already took these tests at a disadvantage. And luckily, she didn't have to take the SAT the next day. It was snowed out. How do you go into a test like that after the day before four tests?
Thank you.
Oh, and by the way, I use Google Classroom, and I use Plickers for testing, for checking immediate things, and I love it.
Cool.
And I think the Common Core talks about fluency and doesn't provide an avenue for it. Thank you.
Hello, Cheryl Sanborn, 1 Gilbert Lane in Plainview. I really want to thank Jody Campagna for bringing up this whole Algebra 2 Common Core issue. We have been in the trenches with this for 3 years, and nobody knows this subject better than someone who lives with a child, who at the end of 3 years, a complete sequence could take potentially 8 regents for 3 years of math. This is a cycle of insanity that at some point we need to stop, because to even... I know that we're all trying to piece together some reasonable plan for these kids to do well. But when we talk about review classes in February, let me remind you, they are not review classes. They are classes of teaching. It's a drive-by shooting. They'll learn. They'll never see it again. They'll be tested and be expected to recall for regents. Folks, that's not learning. That's not teaching. That's bullshit. Sorry, excuse my language. Then comes May, when they're reviewing for Regents number 1 and June Regents number 2. They take 6 other classes. They're getting rigorous now. They're not in Algebra 1 anymore. At some point, we need to stop this. They cannot sit in 11th grade and go back and take Regents from the year before. This is not reasonable. And you know what else it isn't? From the child's point of view, let's get into the mind of a child. This is not fair. They play sports. They have after-school clubs. They're in leadership groups. Now we want them to sit after 9 period and go to 10 and a half periods, basically, twice a week for a month. after you've already had those other reviews. There's no end to it. And I know we're all trying to do right by the kids, but the level of anxiety and tutoring and testing and the 3 to 4 hours of homework a night, and by the way, my child had 3 tests today, so I'll validate that. I just want us to take a reasonable look through the eyes of a child. This is not learning. This is jamming down their throats to deal with an incomplete sequence. It's a failure ride, whether they do well or not. Let them be kids.
Thank you, and please, let's keep the language to be appropriate.
Sabina Pacheckley, 41 Mitchell Avenue. I have 2 questions. You guys, a few months ago, decided that you're going to pull the Regents grade out of the Algebra 1s from June, from the Common Core. What has happened with that? Parents have not gotten any information.
Jill, you want to jump in on that, or Vince?
So the our data person is working with our guidance person to update the scores on that. We have the data. There was a glitch with the Infinite Campus that Custom, our vendor, is working on completing. As soon as that's done, then those grades will be adjusted.
Okay. Do you know around when?
I was hoping by tonight they was going to be done, but I didn't get word before the day ended. So I will check in the morning to see where our vendor is on that one.
I don't have a Trig 2 student, but I had a algebra student last year, and I'm just telling you now that I have a tutor reteaching her stuff that was missed last year because they spend 40 minutes on exponents. That is not enough. These kids are missing things, and then they're not doing as well on the Regents, and they will not do as well on the Regents because 40 minutes is not enough to spend on one topic. Thank you.
Ladies first.
A change of pace. Stephanie Nelkins, 55 Acorn Lane. Thank you again, Jody, for attacking this, bringing, you know, kind of the elephant into the room, although I've been doing my best to come here every board meeting. I'm sure you guys are, you know where I stand on this. I could have predicted that the kids weren't going to know exponents because, again, not spending a whole lot of time on it 2 years later. They're not ready for what they need. As far as the statistics go, sad to say, but the inaugural year of kids didn't do that much statistics in their first year of algebra. You know, it was a new curriculum. They didn't really know what was going on. Even the statistics that happened, and I follow this curriculum on a daily basis with kids, with multiple kids in all 3 schools. Even doing what they're doing, they haven't done that yet. That happens at the very, very, very end of the year. It's an overwhelming amount of information. I will have to say that this particular cohort of kids, if you gave them a test right now and said, you know, let's just see, what do you remember of this, of that, you gave them a statistics test that they give in the high school, I don't think anyone would really do well on it. It just wasn't known what they needed. There's just so much going on here, and I get, you know, that you would want them to have that, you know, it would be a nice thing to have all the statistics, but you can only fit, you know, if you have a 10-pound bag and you put 15 pounds in it, things start to break. Things start to get bruised, even if you could kind of get by. And I think that's what's happening. You know, kids, you may not be aware, but there are these tests, sort of like test fest before the midterms, because the midterms don't count in this quarter, so teachers want to get tests in. In fact, sometimes they give extra quizzes because they know maybe kids didn't do well on a test, so they'll even throw in a quiz to try to up the kids' grades, and it's just like test, 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 test. And even today, there were tests that went on with the shortened day in 27 minutes. Some teachers decided to push it off. Some teachers, I guess, look, they have other stuff they got to do. They got to get through stuff for whatever reason. But again, these are kids. They're trying their best. Here's a situation. I guess I should have worn a shirt. I don't know. I really want my kid to learn trig. I don't know how easier, you know, what else to say. I just feel it's a lost opportunity. It's something that's going on in some other places. I've been talking about math for 10 years. I was almost afraid to come up here tonight because I actually thought I was going to start to cry. Dr. Lewis, you had said you were going to get back to me about some stuff. I'm sure things have been busy. We had a snowstorm in between. I have a lot of information that I'd really like to share with you, honest information, not pointing fingers, but just what's going on. And then if you really, truly want kids to be successful, there's other pieces that have to happen. It all sounds good on paper. It all sounds good on standards. But again, if you're spending 42 minutes on exponents, and I know my son spent, I don't know, 2 months on those in Kumon, well, he's going to be doing a lot different in Algebra 2 than these kids who had that 42-minute session 2 years ago. And that's maybe why in October you had to run a session on exponents. I could tell you exactly where those problems are going to be. And we're coming into more of them, and especially in that stats area. All I'm saying is to put, I mean, Half Hollow Hills may have an interesting way and approach, but I don't want my child taking anything else or doing anything else midterm week than what it's already going to be on his plate with a three-hour U.S. history exam, English Regents, all the other tests, all the pretests that go on. All they get is like a break that first week back from school, then the next is just like test. So after that, I don't need him taking another Regents then. It's really inappropriate. There's ACTs and SATs for all these kids in their junior year, and even seniors. This is their last gasp to take that test. And some of them need that. They shouldn't be saddled with another Regents at that point in time. I wanted my child to be able to take the ACT, start thinking about that September, October, have that trig done. Your schedule puts him in another schedule. I don't want that schedule. That's not really going to work with all the other things going on in his life, AP exams and this and sports. And it's all well and good to say, hey, Saturday this and that. But you know what? If kids are on sports teams, they have mandatory Saturday practices. Kids are do chorus. You know, there's things going on. Our kids' lives are busy. Plus, that one we could get. Okay. But they also, it's not a terrible thing for a kid to have 5 minutes to just sort of take a breath. I can't tell you how many meals my son, and he's not Mr. Studious. I will never say that. But it's a really sad thing when a kid will tell me, I can't go to the diner with you. I need to get this packet done. Bring me home a hamburger. That's really sad, but that's what it's come down to. And he is not someone who's staying up till 2 in the morning. He's, you know, and this is, even on that level, this is what's happening. So we could go to a 9-period day. My son could take 2 or 3 lunches, whatever will fit in. I just can't buy into this. But I just want him having basics. I want him having trig. It's my understanding that the teachers are very willing to do an about-face. Now, the fact that that is their feeling is sort of saying something, too. It's not saying they are against the idea. It's also telling me, you know, they're not willing to fight for this thing either necessarily to say, oh, no, this Algebra 2, this is the best thing that's ever happened. You know, my son has someone who could teach this in her sleep. Absolutely in her sleep. And I'm missing out on that. At best, maybe I can hire her over the summer to try to do it in August to get that back in. I again, it's been 10 years. I just care about the math. The kids shouldn't be walking into 2 Regents exams. That's 13% of their grade, one of which they know nothing about, one of which they're not going to be prepared for. And to add things in after when they're taking all these other classes, what are you trying to do to them? I mean, you know what? If you think it's rigor, it's not rigor. It's not rigor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
No shock.
Good evening. Jacques Wolfner, 151 Sutton Drive, Plainview. I'll try to keep it short. It's been mentioned here that the SATs were scheduled for Saturday and they've been postponed. And perhaps we have learned, or have we learned, when they will be rescheduled. I was away for the BOCES budget meeting, but I did get my questions and your questions submitted and answered, and I believe the board got a copy of that as well as a copy of the budget for batch one. There was a question about what's going to happen with the Long Island High School of the Arts and the STEM schools. There's been some publicity in Newsday, but that is the those two schools are going to be discussed in February at the budget meeting, and at that time I will ask those questions, and we'll get the information from BOCES. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Beth Berger, 83 Stephen Drive. I have a 10th grade daughter who's an honors student, who's in honors algebra 2. I don't have a lot I can say, but I do want to say that she's never really struggled in math or any subjects, really. And this is the first year. She cries. She's freaking out all the time over it. And I wouldn't even know where to begin to even get a tutor, because I don't know who knows the Common Core stuff. Like, people are saying they get tutors. I'm not sure where to get them from. But I just feel like it's unfair that she's been a guinea pig all along. I know people keep saying the same things, but I just want to reemphasize the same feelings. And I have a lot of friends who aren't here but would have been here who also feel the same way. Everyone I talk to pretty much feels the same way, who have 10th graders in Algebra 2. And I have an older daughter who did Algebra 2, the regular Algebra 2. There was no stress, and I feel like everything with this having to do extra reviews to fit in the trigonometry is going to create problems, especially for someone like her. She's very involved in a lot of activities, and she would never be able to fit another review session, another thing in her schedule, on top of all the other classes that she would like to take. Math is not her special, you know, interest or passion, so I mean, she would definitely not want to have to take more math than just the normal class. Anyway, that's pretty much all I want to say.
Hi, my name is Jackie Pollack, 12 Ruth Road, Plainview. I really don't have too much to say. I'm just here really to just reiterate exactly what the other parents have said, what Stephanie said, what Susan said, Suzala. Same thing, my son is in algebra honors, never had to struggle. He's 10 points lower than he normally is, and it's not the grade that's the issue. It's what he's learning and what he's not. The trigonometry is a big issue. To add reviews on Saturdays or weekends, that's just unacceptable. I don't know how you think that is okay to add after hours to kids for the rigor that they have with sports and honors and all of these things, how that's acceptable as a district to say they're not being taught but we'll teach them after school? That's just absurd. It's crazy. It's unbelievable. And I've never spoken here before, and I think it's important that you see faces that you don't normally see. I know that you're used to hearing from Stephanie, you know, and I know she can drag things on, but what she's saying is absolutely true. Everything she says is right. I stand behind it 110%. We need other solutions than, you know, it's a hard, I get it. I tell my kids all the time, things are hard in life. You are not going to love every job. You're not going to, you know, everything's going to be difficult. You can have teachers you don't, you know, bosses you don't love. But after school and to learn something that they're supposed to be learning during the day because it's not being taught, it's absurd. So I just want to add that. Thank you.
One more time. Thank you, Jody. I'm Ivy Chasen, 132 Washington Avenue. Thank you very much, Jody, for bringing this up. You don't often get this many parents as passionately speaking about a topic. I, again, will reiterate, I know nothing about math, but I don't think adding a third Regents test to their repertoire is really going to help them a lot. My son does very well in math, but I noticed that this year has been particularly difficult because the teachers are teaching so quickly. They're not teaching accurately. They don't know the curriculum. Something needs to get done, and we're just here to ask you to consider the options that have been put forth tonight. I think, Dr. Lewis, you made some good points. I agree. I appreciate your getting involved, but something needs to get done. It can't keep going on like this. Also, before we finish, I would like to reiterate the idea of having some kind of feedback to the public participation from the board. I think that needs to be brought up again. Some way of communicating, not privately, but publicly. We're all sitting here together today to share with you what how we're feeling, and yet we don't get feedback at all from the board on the public participation. And I feel like there needs to be some way for you to come back. Even if you don't answer anybody tonight, I get it, you know. But there should be some way for you to come back to us and, you know, either in writing or publicly articulate what it is that you feel about certain things or when you're going to bring up topics. So that's sort of separate from the Algebra 2. But thank you.
Hi, I'm Noreen Kazi, 10 Presidential Drive, and I'm a mother of two in Algebra 2 as well. I have one in ninth grader and 10th grader both taking Algebra 2, and I have a couple of concerns. Well, you know, obviously I'm a mom of two different kids in two different classes taking Algebra 2, and so I compare. And I notice that one son is going much deeper into each topic than the other. So that's just something to be concerned about, that not every child is getting the same curriculum. And I can see that just with my own two kids. Another thing, concern I have is that, I wrote a couple things down. It's my first time up here, too, so I'm a little nervous. We let Stephanie do all the talking for us most of the time. So another concern is, like, my concern is that my son was told by his math teacher that he might not know everything on his midterm because they're not prepared. Now, this is a test that is prepared by Plainview teachers. How is he going to be prepared for a test that no one even knows what's on? You know, that's another concern. I'm very, very pleased with these initiatives that, you know, this review class. I think in theory they're great, but same thing, you know, we made the initiative to go. I signed up for the review classes. My kids were too busy to attend them. They had other commitments. So, but I think in theory they're great, but it was just really hard for them to attend. And then the other thing is, well, one thing I'm really happy was I love that they all had the same midterm review. So that was one positive. Definitely, I really like that this year, that they all had that the same common midterm review. And in past years, different teachers have given different midterm reviews for the same test. So I'm really pleased to see that they all had the same midterm review this year. So that was one positive. And then same thing about the January exam. You know, I'm concerned about that as well. ACTs, driver's ed, SATs. I mean, these kids are really, really packed with things they're doing. And the other concern was, I know we said that the last 9 days, this is a little bit more of a personal concern and only affects a small percentage of the students in Plainview. But I know if you're going to, in those last 9 days, teach them the trig that they were supposed to learn on the old regions, I know personally my kids are going to be fasting those last 9 days, you know, and as when they're taking the Regents as well. I don't know how much is going to go in their head those last 9 days without food and water, you know, sitting in a hot classroom. So I'm just thinking about that as well. That's a little personal. It's on a smaller scale of kids, but I'm just wondering how it's going to be. And I know maybe we can think about ACs for the kids that are fasting during the Regents. Okay, thank you.
All right, that brings us to public, to routine business. Do we have a motion for routine business? Ginger? Debbie? I know we have some holds and separations. Okay.
So, yeah, so can Jody and I want two separate things for a separate vote on 7.7 and 7.14.
Before you do that, okay. Jacques asked a question about the makeup of the SATs February 20th.
Okay, so we have to vote. So we want to vote on Okay, motion for everything in routine business except for the two items.
We already have the motion.
Right. Okay, all those in favor? Cool. Okay.
Then take 7.7.
7.7. All those in favor? Abstaining? Cool. 7.14. All those in favor? Abstaining? Cool. Okay. And now we're into. No. We now have three items in new business. So 11.1 is district plan of services for special education. Do I have a motion? Ginger? Debbie? Discussion? All those in favor? Okay, 11.2, additional staff development proposals. Lauren? Emily? Discussion? All those in favor? 11.3. Give her the mic. Let her make the motion.
I'll be very brief. I know the motion. Oh, I'm just making the motion?
Yes. You're making the motion for...
But I made the motion.
No, you made the motion to make the motion.
Make the motion.
Oh, my God, I have a headache.
Okay.
I am making the motion for us to revert back to the old Algebra 2 trigonometry curriculum for the remainder of the year and to focus on preparing the students for the second test.
Do I have a second? Discussions?
So what we have is, as Ginger mentioned, really a terrible choice. On the one hand, we could continue focusing on the Common Core algebra, which we've been doing for 5 months, preparing for a required exam, or we could shift the gears after those 5 months and refocus on algebra trig, not giving up, but sort of giving up on the required regents and focusing on the old regents. It seems to me the only reason we're having this conversation is because the Board of Regents belatedly gives this safety net to this group only. In a way, this group has a benefit that no one that follows them will have. So that next year's cohort doesn't have the safety net. And so it, you know, we've had our teachers, we've had our curriculum focusing on something that's required. You still have the ability to take the second test. And we're looking to change things under the assumption that the old exam is going to be easier, under the assumption that our students are not going to be prepared or do well this year. And I'm not quite sure I'm comfortable enough to make those assumptions and make those leaps. And I understand that there may be 15 districts, even if there's 30, even if there's 50 out of more than 700 in the state. Is there more than 700 in the state? More than 700 in the state? I'm not convinced that now, if anything, I think the Board of Regents did a disservice by even giving that as an option. I have to say, I view this as one, when we were talking about what to do with last year's regents, I separated what I think is predominantly curriculum or instructional based. I view this one as one that is basically curriculum, predominantly curriculum instructional based. And so therefore, I think that we should defer to those that we hired with the expertise to make that decisions, and under these circumstances, stick with what we've been doing, continue to prepare our students to do well, which I think they will on the Common Core Regents. Prepare them with those trig topics. They want, if you choose to take that second option, and you have the safety net.
I agree. It's also a little bit of a Hobson's choice here. And
this is something that I've struggled with. I certainly agree with Ginger that to the extent possible, we really need to focus on making sure that our students get the help they need, not necessarily limited to outside classes. You know, I certainly sympathize, you know, having an 11th grader, you know, I understand how tight time is. You know, some of my issues are with sort of switching horses midstream, partway through the year, having, you know, I think you're going to end up with a fairly incoherent course if you suddenly switch to the other curriculum. The other, you know, issue that I have is students are very concerned about, you know, families are very concerned about taking the SAT, which, you know, as we all know, come February 20th, the old SAT is going bye-bye. And David Coleman, who's head of College Board, is he's all about Common Core alignment. So, you know, in terms of what is going to benefit students in terms of preparation, you know, from a pragmatic point of view, you know, I feel that there is benefit to staying with Common Core to prepare them for the test. But, you know, I'll say the same thing I'm sure we're all going to say. It's a bad situation. I don't think there are any really perfect grade alternatives. I think what we're coming up with here is an attempt to mitigate that will give students, the best I can say is it's going to give students an opportunity to raise their grades, and I know that that is, you know, a real concern. So, you know, while I don't love the, you know, any of the alternatives, I feel like what was presented is probably going to be the best one.
I just want to say one last thing in wrap up, and when we get to the point where we're even entertaining the idea of having students take three Regents exams on the same topic, I think that is just such a sign of how messed up this whole thing is. Three Regents exams on the same topic to get a desirable grade. And we're not talking about a handful of students who typically struggle. Next year, we won't have a choice. This year, we have a choice. And while I wish we weren't in this mess, I think it's time for us to say, how do we just give these students some relief? And I don't think three Regents exams is it. I don't even know what to say at this point, because again, the fact that we're even discussing three Regents exams on the same topic just irks me, and it just and this is not Plainfield Bethpage's fault, it's the fault of the state. But, you know, at this point, I think we just need to be thinking of some relief for these poor kids who have already taken two Regents exams in math for the last 2 years and now face the opportunity of having the possibility of having to take three this year. You know, when they just need some relief. You know, when do we say enough?
I have a question for Lorna just on this whole thing. We're not saying anyone has to take the old test, correct? We're just saying they have to take the Common Core. The current, what we have in place right now says you have to take the Common Core test. In our district, anyone taking the old test is completely optional. It's optional this year, it's optional this year. So they're not being told they have to take three tests. If they want to, they could take the other two. If we go the other way, they still have to take two because they still have to take the Common Core one, which we're all saying we want, which you're advocating the kids take being unprepared for, because there's no way we could do both. I believe everyone said that from the beginning. You just can't do both. I have a hard time saying that they're not going to be prepared for the Common Core test. In fact, as a betting man and a risk person who looks at it, I'll be willing to bet that the bulk of the parents will turn around, see what the scores are, and say, you know what, even if my kid gets 100 on the old one, it's not going to raise his grades enough, it's not worth the effort, we'll take the grade we got. Partially because I've looked into and analyzing the numbers of the weight of a Regents on an overall score, but also because I know having two kids come through it, if the reward doesn't, you know, if the effort doesn't measure to the reward, they're not going to do it. I do understand people are frustrated their kids are doing a little bit lower on their grades on these classes than they would with the traditional easier tests. I get that. But as someone who's advocated for us to move forward to, we can call it rigor, we can call it AP, we could all this stuff, I just want to see, I know what colleges are saying. I know that colleges are saying kids are going into college taking remediation, taking remedial math, and I just want to see that we're giving the kids the best opportunities they have. And I firmly believe that the kids who take the Common Core very early, September, October, will have all the trig backfilled, and they will be on a pre-calc level of where they had to be. And I just want to add something else to this whole equation. That is if the endpoint is calculus and they've reshuffled how you get there, eventually you get to it through pre-calc. Some stuff may have been pushed into the other algebra or geometry, and stuff that's going to be pushed forward. But at the end of the day, it does all get covered. We're going to make sure of that. We've got a commitment here that we're going to do the trig in the beginning of pre-calc, whether or not you choose to take the old test. So I'm just looking. I'm not seeing that we're taking kids short, but I am seeing the sequences changed. And I understand people's frustrations. I'm not saying I'd advocate for this. I think the Board of Regents and the state were very, very stupid in the way they did this. If they laid it out 2 years at a time for a grade, first year is kind of a test period to see if it does, you know, who wants to do it, who doesn't. Second year counts. Then you go another year, second year, then no kids get hit by it again and again and again. But, of course, the state ed's got to rush and shove everything down our throats and not give us time. And they brag about building a plane while it's in midair as if that something is a point of honor. And it's shameful what's happened. But I don't think we as a district are not going to allow these kids to get shortchanged despite the fact of what the state's doing. And we're going to do our best to make sure these kids are prepared. And I'm confident that they're going to do a lot better than a lot of people think on these tests. Ginger, you want this mic?
Just not gonna touch it. This is one of those things that you wish you had a little bit more time to sit and try to strategize, but the time is, you know, it's really just about run out. Unfortunately, as is typical at the state, they wait to the very last minute to make a decision. That does impact the lives of a lot of children. I did ask Dr. Lewis, would it be possible to have a class that is the Common Core and a class that goes back to the algebra trig? Just like you would have an AP. I know Jill's having a heart attack over it. But I'm trying to find solutions that are good for kids. That's what my role is. And whether or not, you know, we want to sit there and say, I'm going to have a nervous breakdown, I can't do it. I'm just throwing options out to have a conversation. Can we help these children? And I understand the kids have to take the test, whether they want to or not. It's mandated by the state. For kids that find math really tough, it's going to be a real tough exam for them. Really, really tough. And I feel for those kids. I've said it over and over again. We look at the 60% up there, but there's the kids over here that are just absolutely struggling for it. So any idea that we throw out, and when I talked in terms of doing something on weekends, whatever, it's because parents have come to us and said, when can you do it outside the school day? Well, barring anything else, there's only a Saturday that you could talk about. For kids that parents have said, my kid plays a sport, my kid's involved in this, can you do it later? That's why I threw it out, to try to do anything we can to help these kids to make something easier. And sometimes when we're thrown just a bad bunch of crap that we have to deal with, we have to figure out a way of resolving it. And anything that comes from anybody here is meant to say, let's have that discussion, that let's talk about kids first. This is the kid business. That's what this is about tonight. And that's what we have to try to figure out. And that's my opinion.
No, great.
That's where we're going.
I just want to say that I came in feeling one way. I'm now so confused because my heart tells me we are in the kid business. And are we taking this one group of kids and giving them more than they can handle? That's all I have to say.
Just before we vote, I just want to say one thing, and that's the law of unintended consequences. And you've got to be prepared that if we vote on this and we roll it back and it goes that way, there's no chance to redo this if we find out, oh, no, now the next year everything's Common Core and these kids are caught short. And that makes me incredibly nervous, be it the SATs or whatever they're taking. There is a track that has been put in place that we're going to have to live with. So we're welcome to roll this back. The votes will go where they go. But I always worry about the law of unintended consequences. And if we come back next year and find out that, well, it was a short-term fix, we left these kids behind the eight ball, I'm not going to want to be the one to make that vote.
I just want, Ginger, I just want to comment on your suggestion. If we split the kids up, then it's what happens next year, where they fell within that curriculum. So it's not that I'm going, oh my, I'm looking at schedules and where those kids fall within a core, you know, what period they have, what teacher they have. Half those kids go one way, half go the other. So that's one at this point in time. And then now I'm looking at next year where they are in pre-calc and which kids got which topics went. So it, again, I think we're all here for the... Correct.
Here's another thought too, that just rolling it back this year gives us an extra year to align that pre-calc class. Gives us more time to develop the curriculum, to make sure we get it right. So if we roll back this year, we don't necessarily have to implement a new pre-calc next year, right? We can, because all the, if we roll back and go back to A2 trig, right?
No, I mean, the direction right now, it's a Common Core course next year. I'm assuming the Regents is going to do the same thing and weigh in, you know, 3 months down the road and then say there's new.
Is there a pre-calc Regents?
No.
Okay, there's,
But it's a Common Core pre-calc course that's coming.
Okay.
Listen, clearly we're struggling over this. I mean, if this was easy, we would have been done a couple of hours ago. And I hope everyone in the audience can hear that this is not an easy decision for the board to make. But I think we've reached the point where we got to call the vote. So I just want to understand, because it's like a bond vote, and sometimes votes can be tricky. If you vote yes, you're voting to
roll back
yes. to last year. So yes. All those in favor of changing course, going with the switching from the Common Core to the old Algebra 2 trig for the remainder of the year, vote yes. All those against? That's a tough one. All right. All right. That's it. Do I have a motion to go into an executive session for matters of negotiations? Emily, Seth, all those in favor? Thank you very much.
Thanks for throwing my kid under the bus. Thanks for throwing all the kids under the bus.
Hang in there, Jack. How about you?
Happy New Year.
Same to you. Good to see you.